Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
Check out Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. Featuring entertainment, sports, nutrition, Africana studies, holistic healing, and celebrities. Listen to Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com. Talk radio for your mind, body, and soul.
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth, on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soldiers Channel. Sports in Depth is the show, and as always, John Cornfield opens up with us, and we open with a prayer. Dear Lord, we thank you for another day. Dear Lord, we thank you for those things that we largely take for granted. We thank you for being our God. Although we don't live on Park Avenue, by the grace of God, we don't live on a park bench. Lady once said, you're God all by yourself. As we remember Black History Month, let us remember those who went before us. And our forefathers and those who paved the way. And more importantly, Lord, we ask you once again to give us so much, not what we want, but what we need. And we need thee every hour. Thank you for your darling son Jesus died on the cross that we may have the right to the tree of life. And although you may not be by your side, you're God, and God Almighty himself. So we thank you once again, the Lord, and ask you to bless the panel, bless our families here, my family here abroad in Brazil. More importantly, Lord, that your way be our way. And let us remember today, as the last Sunday of Black History Month, those who went before us, who paved the way, that we may have a better way. Your daughter, so Jesus, that gave us the way. Jesus named the Lord. Amen. Doc Stanley, Sports Enough on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel. Sports Destiny Show. It is a Sunday, the last Sunday of Black History Month, and I was in service today, and I really got a lot of thoughts and ideas. You know, the past spoke, and as the weeks have been counted up, wow, it's the last Sunday of Black History Month. And Vivian Thomas, you know, a name, a man who was so vital in the healing of children in the South. Non-African-American children. The first African-American on a stamp, 1940, Booker T. Washington. You look at sports, and Jack Roosevelt Robinson not only was the first African-American Rookie of the Year, Jackie Robinson was the first man ever to win the Rookie of the Year award. Don Newcomb, not only was the first African-American pitcher to win the Cy Young, he was the first pitcher ever to win the Cy Young when the award first came out, and he became the first pitcher ever to win the Cy Young and MVP in the same season and became the first player, African-American-wise and baseball-wise, to ever win Rookie of the Year, MVP, and Cy Young Award. I went across the board, and I put down some names, but I'll come back to it, and the heights Grinch, as the pastor said, you know, the higher they put the fence, the higher we reap. That's why we're such good athletics, athletic-wise and also mentally. Arthur Ashe, twice as good to get half a chance. So we'll be doing a lot of talking about Black History Month on this particular show. The panel is here. I was reading, you know, amazing. It's amazing. I think everybody knows. And me and Rooney were talking about this earlier, you know, Everybody knows that Will Chamberlain, 1,000-0, scored 100 points in one game. What you don't know is that there were only two photographers at that game. There was only two photographers at that game. There is no video of that game. The Warriors were playing the Knicks, who were the second worst team in the league. Okay? There was two photographers at the game. One photographer left at the end of the first quarter. At the end of the first quarter. When Chamberlain scored 100 points, there were 46 seconds left in the game. Okay? But the defense was so designed that they didn't want to get the ball. But the amazing thing about Al Addle said was there was a certain point in the last minute or so where Chamberlain seemed for the coach to take him out. You know, hey, we're winning the game. No. Stay in. Greatest night he ever had from the free throw line, 28 points from the free throw line. He made 28 out of 32 free throws that night. The Dipper, the man who once led the league in scoring with a 50-point average along with 25 rebounds a game and never fouled out of a game. And that particular year played every minute of every single game, including overtime game. Looking at an article in the Afro Times, and it was kind of startling, but I like some quotations that the actress, you know, Tyler Perry, maybe Moving Entertainment, that had this movie come out, Good Deeds, and I've seen her on a million occasions, a lovely young lady, can't believe my glasses are bad, and she's playing in the movie. I first saw her in The Bourne Incident, but award-winning English actress Thady Newton, and she had a couple of quotations that really hit me today as I read the story, you know, and she talked about how, and I think it's something that we all do, we kind of take time for granted, or situations are going to come about, and she was talking about, and they were doing the piece, she said, you know, and two, sometimes, you know, that great song by the Van Dykes, No Man is an Island, and she said something here, you know, how many times have you sat in the cab and allowed yourself to talk to the driver? Because let's face it, that could be the last half hour of your life. We don't appreciate every moment because we think there are bags of moments to pass away in the future. Great line. Secondly, we're social people, beings, and rely on each other. The success of our species is in communication. Once human could communicate, we could bring down that mammoth or track down that tiger. Great line. Got some other quotations, too. I was reading some stuff that Ali had quoted, and just a host of things today. Allen Iverson, I'm reading here. I couldn't believe this, Dusty. I mean, there's a team, a football team, and we're talking about, when we say football, we're talking soccer, but there's a team that is willing to offer Iverson a contract to play soccer.
What's football? Well, did he ever play soccer, or is it just an offer because there seems somewhere along the line I heard something about high school soccer, but I'm not sure. Maybe
well,
you might not know.
Because they offered him, and the thing, too, well, you know, John McEnroe was a very good footballer, as we they call it, you know, soccer, but
soccer
he was
player.
A real good football, hot soccer player, you know, and he McEnroe always said he liked the concept of playing sports from a team standpoint. He never did like the idea of being, you know, the lone player. He always liked the idea of team. You know what I mean?
Team, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
Hey, Doc, with all due respect, Doc and panel, being real good in high school is one thing. Playing anything in the pros is a horse of a different garage.
No,
as far as football
point.
And
I mean,
soccer,
no, we're
have
not,
you ever
not,
seen?
Not,
let me
not,
finish.
Hold on,
let me finish.
Back up.
Have you ever seen Pele play? Have you ever seen Pele? The man was amazing.
Who's that?
The great Pele. Have you ever seen the things he could do with a ball?
Well, Pele, we're talking about the Ali of football or
soccer.
Or Ali was the Pele of boxing. We're just talking about the fact that, you know, because it's at the high school and those levels where you fundamentally learn how to play the game.
The basics.
I mean, Deion Sanders talked about the reason why he became a cornerback because when he tried out for the team, that was the spot where there were less people there. So he went over to that spot. The great Fabiana Moura, who is the greatest pole vaulter in the history of Brazil, and she was number one in the world for a while, and she said, you know, she –
the coach told her, hey, look, come on. I got an event I want you to be in. Jen Penn, I got to know. She was playing basketball. She was on the basketball team, and who became a future husband said, hey, look, you know what? I think you could do good at this sport. I mean, the thing is, we're not equating their ability at that level to a higher level, but the fact that they did play some. I mean, that's the problem with
exactly.
these sports writers. We've got sports writers who never played marbles. Never played marbles, but they can tell you who's the best fighter in the world. Or how
exactly.
are you supposed to hit a Nolan Ryan fastball or a Marichal curveball, and they never played marbles, which brings to this
right.
point, Pee Wee Reese got the nickname Pee Wee because he was a marble champion. Doc Stanley Sports Network and the Blake Rainbow.
Do you remember, Doc?
Go ahead, Dusty.
Doc? Yeah. Here. Do you remember, oh, my God, my name slipped me while you were talking. Oh, yeah, Reynaldo Nehemiah.
Yeah, Nehemiah.
Was it gold medal?
Excuse me, Dusty, you mean Dr. Reynaldo Nehemiah?
ran track, but he played a little bit of football. Guess what? The 49ers signed him up.
Well, hey, listen.
Yeah.
What about Joe Frazier's Olympic roommate? Bob Hayes.
Bob Hayes. Exactly.
Best man in the world.
So the reason why these franchises are doing what they're doing is not for commerciality. The guy has had some background, some basis in which they say maybe he might want to play soccer. You know, he's not playing football. What is it, basketball anymore? So
exactly.
maybe he might want to play soccer because he's a two. Look at Sergio Martinez. The guy is a three sports or four sports. He was a cyclist, a tennis player, and he was under contract to play pro soccer.
And listen, Allen Iverson was a phenom as a quarterback. There were schools
yeah.
who wanted him to go to college as a football player, and there was talk a few years
yeah.
ago that the Sixers wanted him to come and play for them.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
You know, Julius Erving said something I'll never forget. He said, you know what, as a kid, as the seasons change, that's what you – Dusty
wow.
may be a
he
great boxer, him and Harold. But when the football season came, they were out there playing football with us. Now, it was good.
Exactly.
He was on our team because when the Bullies came, we sick Harold and Dusty on them. Yeah, you ain't that like me. You know what I mean? But now Rooney, okay, so Rooney's a great wrestler. But the basketball season, hey, Rooney's rebounding, and we go down to that neighborhood. It's pretty tough. We got Rooney. Ain't nobody messing with Rooney.
Exactly.
Hey, let me say something about that, and Harold and Dusty will appreciate this. Actually, during the off-wrestling season, I dabbled in boxing. So I have a great appreciation, Doc, of what Dustin and Al went through. And the reason that I decided not to really continue with it, I got tired of running 10 miles every damn day. It was a pain in the butt. Got to tell you, 10 miles every damn morning, 5 miles here, 5 miles there. I'm like, what am I going to do? What am I damn life?
Well, that's what kept you out of trouble.
Well, you know,
how
this article started in the Afro Times, indoor soccer team says AI won't have to practice if he agrees on an unusual deal. So it's an indoor football team. Check this out now. Former NBA superstar Allen Iverson and the game of soccer aren't pairing that most sports fans would expect or are pairing. Yet for $20,000 a game, the Rochester Lancers of the major indoor soccer league are willing to gamble on just how well his athleticism will translate into the beautiful game. And no worries, AI, you won't have to practice if you agree to play. So this
oh,
is
wow.
something that now Al Iverson, his numbers are staggering when you
mm-hmm.
look at the play. You know, Iverson, they say only Michael Jordan was more popular as a basketball player. Iverson led the NBA in scoring four times and has career averages. This is wow. He has a 26.7 career average and 6'2" assists per game. That 26. Do you know that 26.7? That is higher. That is higher career wise than Earl Monroe.
Wow.
Walt Frazier. Okay. It is a point less than Jerry West, and a .5 than Oscar Robertson.
Well, let me ask you something, Doc. Now, I'm not trying to throw any water in the pool, but didn't Allen take more shots than all of those guys?
Well, I'm going to tell you what Julius Erving said. 26 points a game is 26 points a game. I don't care how many shots he took. Let's give him credit for putting the ball in the hoop. The guy was 6 feet, maybe 5'10". I mean, it's an amazing thing. Man, nobody shot the ball more than Pistol Pete. And you never hear about those things. You know, hoist them up. You know what I mean? But all they say about great scorers, they got to shoot the ball. I'm not saying Allen Iverson is in the same class. I don't think anybody, I'll say this right now, also, nobody, as far as I'm concerned, will ever be in the same class as Oscar Palmer Robinson, that be it Michael Jordan. There's only one guy I ever saw play that was at that level. That was Dr. J, the ABA. Dr. J, the NBA, was not at the same level. They weren't passing the ball. He made some adjustments in the game. Dr. J at the ABA, you could breathe in the same breath with Oscar. Oscar, you know, like I said about Oscar, 3 years in a row in college, he was the collegiate player of the year when black players were said to be not have the mental capacity to play the college game. 3 years in a row, he came out of college averaging 33 points, 15 rebounds, and 7 assists a game. When he left college, he was college basketball all-time leading scorer. The first game he ever played in Madison Square Garden, he scored 56 points at the time of no clock. 56 points, and because it was said by, you know, because they played in the big state. And his 56 points was more than the other team scored combined. Oscar Robinson, in his first game in Madison Square Garden, outscored the whole Seton Hall team. So if I'm out of concern, nobody. Michael Jeffrey Jordan, Julius Winter Irving, Isaiah Lord Thomas, Larry Joe, nobody will ever be, in my eyesight, the great all-around player that Oscar Robinson was. And, you know, and
well, you said all-around player, Doc, and all-around, you're probably right.
Rooney, there's no problem about this, baby. There's no argument about this. There's no problem about this.
Wait a minute. No, I got to challenge that, Doc. Wait a minute. I got to challenge that, Doc. I got to put my guy from the New York Knicks in, the poil, Monroe. Thank you very much.
Hey, listen, Rooney, when you come at me strong, baby, okay? Because Earl, great offensive player. Earl was.
The thing
you have to understand about when I say it's like Willie Mays. When I say Willie Mays, give me a player, and I'll tell you a part of their game that Willie excelled in. Clemente, and I hope Nat is with us today, who's doing that piece for Clemente. Okay,
I'm
Nat.
Here.
Everybody, say hello to Nat Bergman. Everybody, say hello to Nat.
Hey,
right, how did that? Yeah, Nat is doing a piece on Clemente, so we're glad to have him today. See, my thing is this: Roberto, Willie Mays hit more home runs. Aaron, better fielder, better arm. Barry Bonds, better arm, better base stealer. Mickey Mantle, better arm, better fielder, better base. Joe DiMaggio, okay. I tell people this when they talk about DiMaggio, Mays, you know, Willie Mays is better base runner, better arm, and people talk about Joe. I say, well, you know what? Here's a stat for you now. If you gave Joe DiMaggio 100 home runs for the 3 years he spent in the military, okay, he would only have one more home run than Willie Mays. 661
wow.
He would have, and Mays would still have 660. And this was without adjusting the 2 years that Willie spent in the military and the 10 balls a year that he had to hit in Candlestick Park in 13 years. So if you gave Joe 100 home runs per year, he would still only have one more home run, Willie Howard Mays. Doc Stanley Sports Up with the Blake, with the Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports and Death is the show. Gang, what's happening to the All-Star game, Hoopster?
The West is killing them right now.
Yeah. Well, Jesus, what acrobatics. What is that kid, Griffin? Is he Griffin?
Westbrook, everybody. 97-84, third quarter.
Well, what's the score now?
97-84.
West?
Yeah, the West. Yeah, they putting it on them.
You know, let me tell you something too, Rooney. This is how great Oscar Robinson was. I remember the All-Star game with Jerry West. That was the year that I believe the Lakers won the championship. And West hit the game-winning shot. And forgive me, gentlemen, if I'm redundant and repeating the story. And at the end of the game, they brought Jerry West over. Jack Twyman. Oh, Jerry, you know, great shot, you know, boom, boom, boom. You know, what was that last play? And I still see the look on the great Jerry West, because when you say Jerry West, you got to put great in front of it. Zeke from Cabot Creek, you know what I mean? The guy, 27.7 lifetime scoring average, and I never forget the look on his face, and it looked like, you know, what kind of question is that? You know, his face said, "What he said, all we were trying to do, the greatest players in the world, all we were trying to do, the best players who ever played this game, some of the 50 greatest players who ever played the game, all we were trying to do was get the ball to Oscar." Fox Stanley, Sports Network on the Blake Radio Rainbow Soul Channel, Sports Network, the show. It is, real quickly, in the synopsis, I mentioned the fact that we wanted to say happy birthday to both Eddie Murray, the great Eddie Murray, I shot up my buddy the other day, and Floyd, pretty boy Mayweather, who will be in town this Tuesday at the legendary Apollo Theater, along with, Dusty, we'll talk about Carmelo Alvarez and Sugar Shane Mosley. They both had birthdays on the 24th. Eddie Murray is one of only four guys in the history of this game, and it's great in Black History Month because they're seen as minorities. Eddie Murray, Willie Mays was the first, Hank Aaron was the second, Rafael Palmeiro joined them. Only four guys in the history of baseball. Ready for this? The double 500 3,000 club, over 3,000 hits, and all four hit over 500 home runs and 500 doubles. Nobody else has ever done it but them four. So we want to say happy birthday to Eddie, a good buddy. And Eddie won three gold gloves, too, and a world championship. And he's second or third all-time on the Grand Slam list during his era. He was number one. And we want to say happy birthday to Floyd Money, or Floyd Pretty Boy. Pretty Boy, that's the nickname he got because in his early part of his boxing career, guy said, "Dak, man, you know, your defense is so good, nobody hits you, Pretty Boy." That's where that name came in. Money, well, after the $1 million came in. Mayweather birthday, too. He's in town. Consensus by those that know.
His birthday's Tuesday, too, also?
His birthday's 24th. His birthday was the 24th.
Oh, the 24th.
Consensus, my book, a lot of them know, the best fighter in the world, pound for pound. Without question, one of the greatest fighters to ever enter the squared circle. I don't think, now I've said this about Mayweather. I think, back in the day, I think Mayweather and Pacquiao are nice contenders. I don't see him beating Ray Leonard. I don't see him beating Duran. I don't see him Tommy Hearns. I don't see him beating Harold Weston. I don't see him beating Wilfred Benitez.
Hey, Doc, you heard about the all-time greats now when you mention those guys.
Well, I just
Hall of Famers, all time great.
Rooney did. I said I didn't see him because I mean, you know, Bruce, same thing with Bernard Hopkins and Harold has alluded to Hopkins, and Hopkins is going to be our last Black History profile. I'm going to do the special 45-minute. I really like hit the press conference him. I think I got something with Chad Dawson and him. Brett, I'm trying to run those because he really was profound. You know, Bernard didn't speak. And then at the podium, but he sat down, and he said some things that I said, "Hey, man, you know." And Bernard said, "Hey, you know." One guy asked Bernard a question, and he said, "You know, did you want this fight?" And Bernard looked at him and said, "You're a college grad, right?" He said, "Yeah." Okay. He said, "You know, that's a stupid question. I mean, why would I be here if I didn't want this fight?" He said, "You know what?" He said, "Mother always told me that, you know, if you repeat what a fool says, then everybody thinks you're a fool too." He said, I mean, how do you ask a question like that? And then he said, now you guys, you know, you've been covering me for two decades now. I mean, how much can you ask me? You know what I mean? And he said, and, you know, you're going to ask me, why do I keep fighting? He said, I saw a documentary last night about Joe Louis. He said, I'm fighting to get the money that they didn't give Joe Louis. Here's a guy, he said, and here's a point I never thought about. He said, Joe gave up prime years, forget the money, prime years of his career for his country. Now look what they did to him. Prime years.
Yeah, well,
and
it's
money.
Joseph Louis
Barrows gave up prime years. Because I've always said this about them. I don't understand why Joe DiMaggio and Willie Mays and Joe Louis and Ray Robinson, why they had to go to the military. I mean, why couldn't you have let these guys serve their military time during the offseason? You could have had them for a longer time. I mean, they want the big thing that Ali said that when because people forget Ali enlisted in '64. Okay, he didn't fight him again in '65 because he had a hernia operation. Okay, Ali said, you know what? I understand that I'm not going on the front lines. I understand I'm not going to get shot out, but what you don't understand is that my fans, okay, that guy down in Birmingham, Alabama, you know what I mean, or the guy up in New England, you know, I'm not talking about the black guy in Birmingham, and I'm not talking about, you know, just, you know, don't forget the Jewish kid out there in Waynesburg. They're going to go into the military because they're going to follow their idol. But they're going to be in the front line. They're going to get killed. Not me. I can't do that to them, and I can't do that because my religious belief doesn't go with that. Hey, he said, whatever the consequences are for standing up for my religion and my belief in love, I'm willing to suffer. I mean, you know,
Doc, can I piggyback something onto that quickly?
Go
you
ahead,
know,
babe.
A lot of people, you know, since so much time has passed since that whole episode, a lot of folks tend to think, and of course the young folks don't know the, you know, the whole deal like we do, but a lot of folks tend to think, you know, since it's been so long, that Ali was originally acquitted, you know, everything was hunky-dory after he went to court. The fact of the matter is that he was facing 5 years and a $100,000 fine, which back then was a lot of coin. Ali was originally convicted, okay? So that shows that he's a man of principle because he had been convicted. He was going to jail for five and giving up 100 large, okay? What happened was the Supreme Court voted 8-0 to overturn his conviction. He was, shows he's a man of principle, but he's about to do 5 years and get up 100,000 worth of coin. So it shows the man was, you know, serious about his principle because he was originally convicted. It took the Supreme Court all the way to the Supreme Court to overturn that conviction and more or less set him free.
Jim Brown, and I've been redundant, and Lady A has joined us. Glad to have the First Lady here with us. Jim Brown, I told this story, Black Economic Union, and the FBI was hounding Jim, following him and stuff, and the agent said, you know, I just felt so bad after a while that they weren't doing nothing wrong. Jim Brown called him in. Part of the Economic Union, Bobby Mitchell became the first African-American player to ever play for the Washington Redskins. Bobby Mitchell, the great Bobby Mitchell, Jim Brown, then Louis Ferdinand Alcindor, whose dad I had the great pleasure to work with as a police officer, the late Captain Alcindor, Lieutenant Alcindor, Bobby Mitchell, the great Bill Felton Russell. Set Ollie down. Said the same thing. You know, say, hey, champ, come on, champ. You know, you see Joe and Willie, all these guys. Hey, Joe, champ, go ahead and take the pressure off. You man, you know, these people may get you. Champ, you know, in 2 years you'll be dead. You'll be out. Jim Brown said, hey, his conviction was so strong that had we continued, he would have converted us. We would have been Muslims. I got a quotation from Ali, and I was going through some of my stuff. And Lady A, as everybody know, DocStanleySports.com, my Trust in God Sports and Death Sports Entertainment Hall of Fame. Go online, look there. But I got a quote. I got a chance to meet Mahdi from the Muhammad Ali Foundation, and he had a quote. Neither fame nor fortune can be taken with us to the grave. Only our service to God for the less fortunate will pay our rent for our place in heaven. One of the many great quotations, but it's the one I didn't know I had. And it just says a lot about Ali. You know, I remember Michael Katz, great boxer writer, once said that Muhammad Ali treats the guy from the high school newspaper the same way he treats the guy from the New York Times. Say, hey, Ali has time for it. Because there are guys, and Dusty, you've been there, and Lady A's been there too. You know what I mean, there's people who, okay, there's Tim from the Daily News, and there's George Willis from the New York Post. George Willis, one of only 22 African-American columnists in the business today. 100% up from 11 it used to be, but still only 22. Or the guys in the Times, you know. But the thing is, you know, they always cater to these guys. And yet, as Wally Matthews, another great boxing writer, said, and I remember Ronnie Camingo, you know, it is the grassroots papers. It's the Afro Times. You know, it's the Big Red News, not the New York Beacon. It's the Amsterdam News. It's El Diario. Those are the papers that get the real fans into the game. After they read Lady A, they say, you know what? I think I'm going to see this fight. After they hear Dusty, they say, you know what? That's the fight I want to see. After they hear Rooney and Nate, they say, you know what? I'm willing to save some money to pay that pay-per-view. Because, as Wally said, they read us every day. You know, we're commonplace. We're happenstance. You know, we're not moving them, maybe informing them, but we're not moving them. Doc Stanley, Sports Devil and Blake with another Rainbow Solar Channel. Sports Devil, the show. Yeah, go ahead.
Kobe Bryant just broke Michael Jordan's record in points and scoring points in an All-Star game.
Kobe, you know, that's amazing. Hoops. And once again, you know, by the grace of God, you heard it here first on the Blake Radio Network on Sports in Depth. I cannot tell you people out there what this panel means to me as human beings.
265.
I mean, it's just, you know, you hear it here first. I mean, this is more than just sports. This is history. You heard
it
here first.
Also,
go ahead.
Your boy is number four in all-time All-Star history, the great Oscar Robertson, 246.
At one time, Oscar was first. Oscar was number one. And no, they talked about that Chamberlain thing. And don't call Oscar a boy. That's my man, baby. Don't call Oscar no boy. And at
Rooney.
That was Hoopster. That was Hoopster. Lady A, how you feeling?
I'm all right. I want to say hello to my esteemed panel and everybody.
Hello.
Say hello.
Hey, yes, your esteemed panel says
Ms.
hello.
Jeff.
Yes.
Hi, Miss Jeff. Right here, what, you got a cold?
That's Harold?
Oh, my goodness. Here we go.
Harold, that's you. Harold, I got to tell you something.
Get
you
up.
Know that your boy, Doc Stanley, tried to pass us some cheesy black and white picture of you to me? Listen, I said to him, ain't nothing like the real thing. I gotta have me some Harold.
Hey, Harold.
Wow.
You know, she came in. She gonna talk about the whole thing. She came. I said, that's Harold. She's that Harold. She's like, I seen Harold. I said, well, you know, you can go make a copy. She said, hey.
Cheesy black and white at that. A cheesy black and white Harold.
Listen. Hey, that's what they had back in the day, baby. You know what I mean?
Listen, don't give me no back in the day. I want the live stuff. I want the real deal, Harold. Please just try to pass us some cheesy black and white picture. I said, you act like I haven't seen.
This ain't the dating game.
Hold on a second. He tried to pass off a cheesy black and white, hold up, black and white photo of you with your afro with the part. I said, I'm not taking that.
Hey, you know what, lady? I'm glad you said that because, you know, that reminds me. The first boxer that ever. I'm going to the Old Fell Forum, and out comes Howard Cosell and Floyd Patterson, who was then the boxing commissioner, asked him for an autograph, and he started to sign it, and he said, hold on, you know, what's your name? Give me your name and address. He said, I'll send you a picture. And I have the picture 2 weeks later to my friend Melvin Stanley, your friend Floyd Patterson. And at that time, Patterson was still the youngest man ever to win the heavyweight championship of the world and the first only man ever to regain the heavyweight championship of the world. Doc Stanley, Sports Network, the Blake, Network, Rainbow, so the Sports Network, the show. Don Buxtell, for those of you African American history wise, was the first African American to make the NBA All Star team. As today, Kobe Bryant has surpassed Michael Jeffrey Jordan as the All Star scorer in All Star history. Michael Jeffrey Jordan, still to date though, is the only All Star player to ever have a triple double in the NBA All Star game. Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports and Depth the show. I talked about some firsts that African Americans had after getting the opportunity to perform. Doc Gooden is still the youngest man ever to win the Triple Crown of pitching in baseball. Willie Mays and Prince Fielder. Willie Mays was the youngest man ever to hit 50 or more home runs in a season in the 20th century. Prince Fielder is the youngest man ever to hit 50 more home runs in the 21st century. And he was just, I think he's about 4 months younger than what Willie Mays was. We know about Jackie Robinson. Chamberlain, the only man to score 100 points in this game. Bill Russell, the first African-American to win an NBA championship as a coach and a player coach. Jim Brown, nobody greater ever better as a football player. As we look at the records, that, I mean, the all-time rushing record was Jim Brown, and since then, Walter Payton, and then after Walter Payton, now it's Emmitt Smith, the great Gale Tate, the all-time receiver, touchdowns and points scored, Jerry Rice, Althea Gibson, the first African-American, male or female, to win a Wimbledon championship. He's out of Harlem. Arthur Ashe, the first African-American male to win a Grand Slam tournament. And he did it the first year where they had the U.S. Open was open to both amateurs and pros. And I have to say he beat the greatest field ever, as he beat the best of the amateurs and best of the pros. Jesse Owens for gold medals. Okay, only tied by none other than Carl Lewis, the Williams sisters. Do you know, as we go into Wimbledon this year, that no female has won that? The Williams sisters have won 9 Wimbledon titles.
Between combined?
Nine Wimbledon titles between
combined,
them.
Combined, Doc.
Nine. 7, 8, 9. I don't think anybody else has won a final, because Serena won his last. So they won 9 of them. I mean, just amazing numbers. Got to get to some other things here, too, gang.
Did you leave out George Foster in the 20th century with Cincinnati Reds? He hit 50 home runs in a season.
No. The youngest man hit 50 home runs in a season.
Oh, you're talking
the
about
youngest
the youngest
man.
Guy.
The youngest man. The youngest man. In fact, this is amazing. This is an amazing stat. You see how the game has changed. When Willie Mays hit 52 home runs back in 1965, he became then only the second man in the history of the National League to hit 50 home runs more than once. The only other guy that had ever done it was Ralph Kiner, who led the league in home runs 7 straight years. And Mays is the only man, the incomparable Willie Mays, to win the MVP 11 years apart. I don't know how the hell Willie Mays only won 2 MVPs. He won it in 1954 when he won his only batting title, and he won it again in 1965 when he hit 52 home runs to win another home run championship. But Mays is the only man to win that thing with an 11-year gap. Ernie Banks, first African-American to win the MVP back-to-back. Barry Bonds, the first African-American to win MVP 4 times or more. He won 7. Roy Campanella, the first African-American to win MVP 3 times, 51, 53, and 55. Roberto Clemente, Nat, I'll bring you in here for a minute. 1966 became the first Latin player to ever win the MVP in the National League. And ironically, the year before, it was the year off in 1965, Zorro Fasales, the outstanding shortstop for the Minnesota Twins, became the first Hispanic to win the MVP in the American League. 2 years after, Elston Howard in 1963 became the first African-American ever to win MVP award in the American League. Nat, your guy came
in
19... Hold on, lady.
Didn't you, Tiger Woods also, wasn't he a big one too for winning where he beat out Jack Nicholson?
Well, he hasn't passed Nicholson yet.
Oh, okay.
He had that pass. I mean, he's one of the he's you know.
He tied him though, didn't he?
No. Yeah. Nicholson has 18. Tiger has 14. Tiger should have had them suckers by now, you know. But he's has a but Nat, you got you here. Glad you joined us. Clemente, 1966, he wins the Roberto Walker Clemente wins the MVP. First Latin player ever to do that.
Yep. And then 1960, a lot of controversy because he finishes in 8th place in the National League voting. A lot of racial elements at play there. He finished in 8th place, way too far down. He called himself a double N-word because he was black and Latin. He felt the writers really, really set him down for that. So a lot of stuff at play with him in the 1960s.
You know, no question about that. I mean, a lot of people thought he should have won it. And if you look at that, I look at back in 1954 and I ask myself, how in the world did Yogi Berra win the MVP in 1954? I mean, the Cleveland Indians ran away with the pennant. The man who led the league in batting played for the Cleveland Indians. The man who led the league in home runs and RBIs, Larry Doby, played for the Cleveland Indians. And there's no question, as me and the late Bill Shannon talked about, that there was some racial overtones in that. How in the world did Yogi Berra win MVP in 1954 over Larry Doby and Bobby Avila, who was Latin, okay, who won the batting title? So, you know, you look at Clemente. I remember Clemente was seen as a hypochondriac. You know, Clemente was saying he doesn't feel good, something's bothering him. They said, yeah, but he went 3 for 5. You know, Mickey, you know, as so many other guys who were hung over, they couldn't play. Wow, what about those bad knees? And you bring up a tremendous point. I mean, you look at the thing that has to be sickening, you know, and it shows you how great Eddie Murray was. Because, you know, if they could have they would have made Eddie first ballot, but his numbers were just staggering. They were really going to not allow Ricky Henderson to get a shot at 3,000 base hits, you know, in his last year. They were going to sit him down. But the question is, how does Tom Seaver wind up with a 98.7 percentile, the highest in the history of baseball in the Hall of Fame, and there was a Willie Mays, and there was a Hank Aaron ahead of him? I mean, how does anybody have a high percentile? I'm looking at baseballs and stuff as I took up my Hall of Fame, and it's amazing. You know, there are guys whose baseballs are more than Willie Mays. How can anybody baseball be worth more than a Willie Mays baseball? But the question is, how does Willie Mays have a lower percentile? How does Hank Aaron have a lower percentile? You know, how does Frank Robinson have a lower? Hey, look, how does Mickey Mantle or Joe DiMaggio have a lower? If Joe DiMaggio didn't get in for the third time, but how does Tom? And listen, Tom Seaver is the greatest right-hand pitcher of his era. Tom Seaver, no question about it. But how does he have a higher percentile than Willie Mays? And if it's not a black and white thing, then you know apple pie doesn't have apples in it. It's crazy. No, but no, these things constantly happen. You know, they talked about it today in church. We're going to move on. Like I said, I just want to keep talking some things about, you know, Black History Month. Hattie McDaniel, first African-American female to win an Oscar, as Oscar night tonight. Halle Berry, the first African-American female to win the Best Actress. Sidney Poitier, the first African-American male to win Best Actor. Denzel Washington, big Jet fan, my buddy. The first and only African-American to win both Best Supporting Actor and Best Actor.
Should be a three-time winner.
Yeah, or even more, but just amazing. Doc Stanley, Sports Network, Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul Channel, Sports Network, the show. Gang, we've got some fights coming up. You know, Harold, you know, I'll talk to you, Harold. How did you find the press when you were out there, Harold? Were they fair? Were they knowledgeable? How did you find the media when you were a star?
I found them very, you know, my thing about the media was just being straightforward, you know, and telling them what I felt. And then if they asked me some crazy questions, I just gave them a crazy answer. But it was just a thing with just being straight up and just telling the truth. I think the truth, is, you know, carries you far. And at the same time, being more entertaining too at the point of being short. You know, you gotta understand, it wasn't not too many fighters back there that was cocky, that was short. Because guys, like I keep saying, you don't know if you ain't never been there. But guys back there could fight. I mean, you know, guys could really, really fight. And if you cocky. And you got a loud mouth like Ali was, then, you know, even if you beat that guy, you got like 100 other guys that can fight that's going to be gunning for you to try to kill you. So, I mean, the word I'm using, kill, I mean that for real. Trying to kill you. So my point is that nobody was bragging and all that. But Ali, you know, Ali brought out a situation where he had so much confidence and was so brave of what he did. I said, you know, hey, it looked like it worked for him. Let me try it after I realized I could fight a little bit. But that was later on. I didn't do that earlier. I mean later on in my career. You know, you just don't do that when you're just starting out because you're gonna get a spanking. But that's the way it was. I mean, Ray Robinson, Emil Griffin, and nobody was. Predicting no round, nobody predicting I'm gonna kick your behind. I mean, it was, you know, that was very, you know, it was. It
no,
wasn't
I mean,
like
okay,
that.
The other question though, how I think, but they, I think the guys, the writers in your day, they were more knowledgeable of the sport. I mean, a boxing writer was a boxing writer.
Yeah, because those guys did more research. Their research was they dug down deep. They knew more about you than you knew about yourself because they really dug down deep and got information that they needed about you. But they were deep guys, man. They was guys that, you know, if they didn't like you, you're going to get a bad write-up. If they like you, you're going to get good write-ups. But, you know, you got to be straight up with them. One thing about you couldn't do was lie to them. If you lied to them, then you had a big, big problem, a big, big, big problem.
Chad Dawson and...
Yeah, little guys, Doc. You know, it goes with the territory, and I think that's what Harold is referring to. It goes with the territory. You're going to have a lot of questions.
Hold on, well, what you and Harold have confirmed.
What I say,
guys, you know, even in the baseball writers in those days, I mean, Bill Shannon told me that, you know, you really didn't talk. If you hit a home run to win the game, okay, I talked to the manager and I would say, hey, Dusty, you got a minute? Dusty, that home run, were you looking for a fastball or curveball? He said, oh, Doc, I'm looking for a curveball, but now, you know, I hit it pretty good. You really didn't talk to the players as they do now, or you didn't have four guys. Now,
yeah, but,
okay, Dusty, you got
to do referring to, what I'm referring to is what Harold said, but is when you – I think I left because I had to go to the therapist, but – Hopkins' response to that reporter. That was a stupid
question.
Let me clarify this, please, okay? The guy asked a question based on his lack of knowledge or review or what
it was a stupid question, Dusty. I mean, that's the bottom line. It's a stupid question.
It shows the lack of courtesy by him going out. It's a stupid question.
It's a stupid question.
So what?
Colonel Hopkins
was
right.
But that's disrespectful to the media. That's what I'm trying to tell you. Guys, how many times you and I criticize reporters? Well, we don't go out there and tell them, hey, you're stupid.
Hey, yeah, but we are not the undisputed light heavyweight champ of the world.
So
we are not being asked
the
stupid question. And we're not being asked the stupid question over and over again. It was Dusty, let it go. It was a stupid question.
No,
I got to go to Tim
Smith.
Hold on, gang. Tim Smith has an interview for us. We'll be back. Me and Dusty got to argue some more.
Later, man.
We'll be back, Dusty. In fact, give me a few minutes. Tim Smith talks about the forthcoming Chad Dawson and Bernard Hopkins fight. Number one boxing writer, I think, of our generation and a good friend of ours. He always asks for Dusty, even when Dusty doesn't show up. He acts like he doesn't know my name. Where's Lois? And I said, who the hell is Lois? And he says, Dusty. Oh, goodness. Now he knows him that way. Tim Smith joins us on Sports in Depth.
Channel Sports Network, the show. Great birthday greetings to a friend, a hero, a role model. You know, Tim, it's beginning to seem like we're not ever going to see Pacquiao Mayweather.
Yeah, that's a sad thing, but I agree with you. It does appear to be that, you know, that it's not going to happen. I thought we were very close to having it happen this May because both guys had a fight that were, you know, that was going to occur around that time.
It was open,
and, you know, Mayweather made the entreaty for the first time that he really wanted to fight Pacquiao, threw it out there and everything, and I thought that was enough. But apparently there are forces at work here underneath the you could describe them as that, yeah, if you're in the comic book, yeah. But, yeah, there are some forces at work that don't want to see this happen at this time, or maybe never, for whatever reason. I'm going to leave it at that. But those forces are not Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather Jr., so I'm going to let you figure that part out for yourself as to who those forces may be. But, I think the longer it goes on and it doesn't happen, the greater the belief that it won't happen. I'm still an optimist. I still think that it can and will happen. And I think it will, you know, happen later in the year.
So, Ray Leonard, the night that Julio Chavez lost to Frankie Randall, Ray said something I'll never forget. He said, there comes a time that it's not about the money. It's about being the champ.
Yeah, and that's absolutely right. I mean, I think, you know, something that's lost on the present generation of fighters is just, you know, what are you giving back to the sport? You know, what obligation do you have for boxing fans to make fights that boxing fans want to see and to keep the sport vibrant and alive? And I think that's sort of lost on this generation of fighters because I think everybody wants to make as much money. They want to get their endorsements. They want to be pretty. They want to do this. They want to do that. They want to hang out with the in crowd. But on some level, you have a responsibility to the sport, to uplift the sport, and to keep it going. And I think that's sort of something that's lost on this generation of fighters.
Next question, Tim. Bernard Hopkins,
Is he going to retire? And then again, why?
Well, that's the point. Why would he retire? I mean, the great columnist Dave Anderson from the New York Times, I asked him once, you know, are you going to retire? And he said, why would I retire? He said, right now, I'm watching football games and I'm playing golf whenever I want to, and I'm still working. So what's the point of retire? When I retire, I'm going to watch football games and play golf. And, you know, and I get paid for it. So, you know, what's the point of retiring? But Bernard Hopkins can retire and watch fights and I get paid for it, or he can, you know, keep boxing and get paid for fighting.
You know, listen to you, it's always education. I remember Black Holmes said the same thing. It's hard to stop doing the best thing you do in life that people are going to pay you.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's tough. If that's all you've been doing for, like, the last 30 years or so, you don't know anything else to do.
And doing it well,
you don't have anything else to do. You don't know anything else to do. So, you know, it's very difficult. And I think, you know, the second part of that is you have to develop something whereby you have another outlet or something else that you can do or get done.
Tim, your birthday is 10 days before Jackie Robinson, 6 days after Dr. King, 4 days after Ali, and you're a legend in that group. Good to see you, my friend.
Thank you very much, Doc.
Doc Stanley, Sports Network on the Blake. You're the Rainbow Soul Channel Sports Network show. Tim Smith, our good friend and the number one boxing writer of this generation. Take a quick break here. We're going to come back as we meet near the halftime mark here. Doc Stanley, Sports Network on the Blake. You're the Rainbow Soul Channel Sports Network show. Jack Johnson, December 26, 1908, becomes the first black man ever win the heavyweight championship of the world. And all across America, all hell broke loose. As there was lynchings, burnings, white America didn't take it. It's Black History Month. You just got to keep focused. They said today, remember those who come before us and what they had to go through. And Rosa Parks, James Farmer, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Ralph Abernathy, Medgar Evers. The names are endless. And some names we don't know. But we got to remember that they paid a price. And they realized, Lady Ada, I thought about you today as the pastor said, that we realize sometimes when we move on and we move to a higher level, there's new level, new devils. And he said something that a lot of today, I remember we were at a African-American Black History Month, and one of the kids asked one of the guys on the panel, he said, well, you know, is racism as bad as it used to be? He said, it hasn't changed. They just use different names now. Instead of telling you can't have the job, to tell you that you're overqualified. You know what I mean? Or, hey, you know what? We'll get back to you. Doc Stanley, Sports Network, the Blake, with another Rainbow Soul, the channel, Sports Network, the show. Gang, we'll be back in a minute. Let's do a quick break, and then we're going to talk about everything. And yes, Rooney, there'll be Sports and Death with the mic on, lights off.
Here, here.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul, BlakeRadio.com.
And looking at things as we play John Coltrane, John Coltrane was discovered by none other than Miles Dewey Davis. Davis discovered Coltrane. They performed the first great quintet. Train on the tenor sax, Cannonball Adderley on the alto, Miles Dewey Davis on the trumpet, of course. Philly Joe Jones was on the drums, and Paul Chambers on the piano of an album that is considered probably the greatest jazz album of all time, which name I will tell you later. Hold the point. Maybe do a little quiz. Somebody call and give me the name. I'll get it for you. And there was a time where Train left Miles' group. Actually, Miles had put Train on sort of suspension. And any music you hear of Coltrane and Thelonious Monk was that period in which Miles and Train were no longer collaborating. Train came back, and then he left on his own. And his greatest piece, considered by many, is his dedication to God, a a love supreme. And with that, Lady A, we've got a lot of fights coming up. Just get your spin on this first one. You couldn't make this press tour here, but me and Dusty were there. Dobson and Bernard Hopkins, who you like and why?
Dawson, you mean? Dawson and
Dawson, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm.
I kind of like Hopkins. And if you ask me why, I have to say maybe I'm just crazy, but I think, you know, I think he's got him pretty much figured out. And I wasn't too impressed with Dawson's last few appearances. So, I mean, the guys may definitely think differently than me, but I just have a feeling about Hopkins this time around. And I think he has something more to prove after his injury. So, I mean, he's a counter fighter. You know, he doesn't really use up a lot of energy in the ring. But I think he kind of has Dawson kind of figured out. I mean, like I said, guys will probably disagree with me, but that's kind of how I see it.
Who do you like? It's Bradley and Pacquiao.
Pacquiao. I like Pacquiao. He's definitely a stronger, quicker fighter. I think Bradley will probably win about 3 rounds, maybe 4 rounds out of that. But if that, I don't really see him giving him much problems more than that.
Talking to Jesse's good buddy, Lee Samuels, our good friend. Samuels said the marriage of Top Rank and Bradley really came about because they were bringing Bradley in to fight Miguel Cotto, but Cotto told him, I can't do 147 anymore. When I did it before, it killed me, it drained me, it took strength away from me, not going to do it again.
You know, Doc, like, you know, I mean, the fight that I really want to see coming up, I mean, is Yorkis Gambo and Brandon Rios. They're going to be fighting in April. That's the fight that I really want to see coming up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's one fight. I mean, you want to see Yorkis Gambo and Rios. Now, I'm not really sure, like, at what weight they decided to fight at.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Dusty knows, but I really don't know because I haven't really had a chance to really look into it. But that's a fight I really would like to see.
And Cotto and Mayweather?
That's going to be a good fight.
Oh, come on, Lady A. What's it going to be?
My heart stays in Puerto Rico on that one. That's who I want to win, you know. My heart stays in Puerto Rico with that one.
That old saying, you know, when you pick it, who you want to win is one thing, and who's going to win is another. I mean, are you telling me that you think that Cotto, who is for all intents and purposes is shot, S-H-O-T, who also, for my good Puerto Ricans, source said, you know, he's nowhere near as remotely as disciplined as Mayweather. Are you telling me Miguel Cotto, who was running out, you saw him running out of gas, okay, in Madison Square Garden, who's like a Timex watch.
He's got to go up in weight, though, too. Don't forget, Mayweather has to go up to 154.
Yeah, but, you know, with these weigh-ins, what does that mean? I mean, weigh in today, and the next day you're at any weight you want to be. But just
I don't
tell him, I mean, Cotto's not even the same class. I mean, you really tell me that you think, well, everybody has a chance, but you mean to tell me that okay, in eyes of many, Mayweather's the best fighter in the world, pound for pound. You're telling me that Cotto, a guy who's been, everybody that he's fought has beat up on him, everybody that Cotto's fought has beat up on him. And you're telling me
I'm
that
going
you
with
think,
my heart in that one, I said, right? So.
Okay, so that's just, so this minute insanity we can blame on your heart.
Yeah.
Lady A, you're something else. Dr. Andy Sports up on the Blake Ritter, remember Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports Network, the show. There was a big situation here as we're talking Black History Month, and these things are all pertinent. The big stop and fish situation, there was a big stat that came out. 97% of the time the people stopped were of African American and Latin descent. 94% of the time, no arrests were even made. At no time was a weapon found here in New York City. They're screaming to the mayor to make an adjustment in this so-called one-sided situation that's happening right now. Okay, we've got back to hoops. So what's happening with that NBA basketball game, Hoopster?
So far, the East is catching up. It's getting very close now. They're playing defense now, so it's getting tight.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good game so far.
Go ahead, lady.
No, I was gonna let me say something, Doc. Since you're talking to the serious hoopster over here, I got something, Doc. I'm not trying to throw water on things, and
I realize
the guys in the NBA haven't had a training camp according to the strike situation earlier. So I'm willing to give the Knicks squad and what have you the you know, the rest of the year to learn playing together and to kind of gel. But I got to tell you, Doc, and like I said, my initial thoughts on the situation from what I've seen, I think one of them got to go. I really think that Carmelo or Maury, somebody has to go, Doc. I'm willing to wait till the end of the year to see how they kind of gel, because they really haven't had much of a chance to play together this year because of the training camp thing. But I'm going to tell you, Doc, my opinion, let them go. Let them got to go. And Stoudemire doesn't look like the same guy to me. I don't know if he's playing hurt. I know he's playing with a heavy heart because, obviously, my heart, I mean, I know his brother, so I know he's playing with a heavy heart. You know, he doesn't look like the same guy to me, Doc.
I think your point is, your great line is well taken, because one thing, he's probably still, you know, I'm going to tell you, and you know, nobody knows this more, you know, than Dusty. I mean, I remember, you know, Dusty went through a long, long, long period of grieving over his brother. It was a good year, a year and a half before I could get Dusty to even look at boxing again. And, you know, he said, hey, you know, give me some time. So, you know, we don't know how long that's going to take, but, you know, the great brother that Dusty was to his brother, you know, it took this team a long time to get over there. So that could be a big factor. And that also the fact that maybe he may not be healthy. But, you know, I'm thinking, though, and when you say this kind of stuff, it always gets me, you know, if Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and James Worthy and Magic Johnson can all play together on the same team, well, why can't Stoudemire and Anthony and Lynn play together on the same team?
Why you got to go that far, Doc? Why don't you just go to the Miami Heat? Look at all three of those guys. They're all top-notch players.
Thanks, lady.
Dwayne Wade, LeBron James. Go ahead. And, you know, and somebody help me. I'm forgetting his name.
Chris Bosh.
Yeah, all three of those guys. I mean, come on, you don't have to go that far. Those guys are all all-star players, and they play together.
It took them a while to gel, but I got to tell you, Lady A, watching this squad and the way they – it's just my opinion. And like I said, obviously I'm willing to, you know, wait till the end of the year to see how they wind up gelling together if they do. But I'm just going to say, you heard it here first. One of them is going. I don't know what kind of deal it's going to be, what kind of package, what they're going to – one of them is going.
I think it's too soon, Mooney. I think it's too soon to be saying that. And also you got to look at the fact that the season is a lot shorter. You know, I think those are all relative factors that you have to kind of put into the equation. You know,
well,
I mean,
right,
look, when you look at the season, hold on, honey, because when you look at the season, okay, you could be saying that, but, you know, okay, the season is shorter, but also, you know, hey, you know, since we were talking about Miami, they didn't gel overnight, those guys. It took them, look, they went to the playoffs and they lost.
You're right.
They went to the playoffs and they lost.
Get them to the end of the year to see how they look.
They went to the playoffs last season. They lost.
They gel. But I'm just saying, you heard it here first, okay? And I understand what you're saying. I'm taking all that into consideration. I said I'll give them to the end of the year because, you know, they didn't have the camp in all nine. But I'm telling you, as we sit here today, one of them is going. You can say one of them is going.
Well, he's got the salary cap too, man. So that's going to be hard to trade one of them because that salary cap.
When you look at it,
I mean, you know, especially this last season, the Heat went to the end.
Oh, they went,
and they didn't make it. And I think that now, you see, and they just started playing together, those guys. You know what I'm saying? Last season. Now look at them. They destroyed the Knicks. Like, they destroyed them.
All of their wins had been by 20 points or more.
They're unbelievable. They're playing really well.
They're playing well to the see with the playoffs. That's what
Of course, yeah. That's a whole different.
That's the second season. But
yeah, that's the second season.
You
yeah, you can't.
You can't
yeah,
take away. What we're going to do? Bring that in with some baseball. But I want to get back to Dusty, and I just want to know why. Oh well, Dusty, do you think Miguel Cotto has a shot against Mayweather?
Absolutely. And I tell
give it to us.
You said something ridiculous because you're not a doctor. He's not shot. Okay?
We say Dusty.
Number one. Number two, if you're going to compare records, as far as I'm concerned, with your hero Mayweather, he has an asterisk to his 42-0. Did he fight Margarito? Did he fight
My hero's name is Jesus Christ. Dusty, are you trying to tell me that Cotto hasn't had any tough fights?
Are you going to let me finish your what?
He
has.
Okay.
I feel that he has a chance to beat Mayweather because of the upscales, the training that he's gotten from. And he's changed and he's improved. Sure, he fought Margarito wrong a second time. He hasn't learned his lesson with Margarito. And he was
back. Now, what did he do wrong the second time that he had done the first time? Wow.
The same thing that he did the first time. He let Margarito crowd him and pound him. And he was ready to go. That's why I wish they had that 10th round to see if he really changed. Because in that 9th round, he
was coming back
to his freaking corner.
If you can see this, and you can because of your great fights, but Dusty, aren't you concerned then that against an even more skilled fighter that he may revert to not doing what he has to do? And has to say here, Dusty, the people that are – here's the question, Dusty. Is he calling all the shots in this corner? Is he not – I mean, he's kind of not been the same fighter since Emmanuel or when he had his uncle in his corner. Is he kind of doing what he wanted to do, Dusty? I mean,
He's being trained by a good trainer, an expert trainer, and who has – if you notice that he's changed his style somewhat for the better, like Emmanuel Stewart did. Now, this is the question. Is it enough to be Mr. Undefeated? I don't know, but I feel he has a chance, like anybody else. Last night, you look at two dudes who were 50% of a possible talented duo, Devon Alexander and Adrian Broner.
Right.
But who did they fight?
Nobody.
Mediocre guys like
Nobody,
Maidana.
Nobody. They fight nobody.
Mediocre
I was
guys
surprised
like
at that fight.
And this guy, Eloy Perez. Okay, they gave him a little hustle. Maidana staggered Devon Alexander, but Devon danced all over him, so he looks great. And the same thing with Adrian Broner. Now, everybody
well,
talks about
Broner's going to be good. Broner's going to be. Keep an eye on Broner. Broner shows potential.
I'm not impressed by Broner. I'm not impressed by him. Okay, this is what I'm trying to tell you. In fact, Broner comes out of the Mayweather school of elbows, because that's the way he fights.
Okay.
So I'm telling you that if Miguel is in the condition, or maybe he does have a chance. After all, Mayweather's 35, Miguel is 31. This business of everybody saying, like Teddy Atlas said, oh, he shot. He's not shot. He's had wars other than Mr. Askren's Mayweather. That's what I'm saying. If you're going to talk about being shot, the one who shot is Pacquiao. I looked at Pacquiao. He looked
Whoa.
Old beyond his years. He looked old
Dusty,
beyond his
hold
years.
Hold on. Wow. You're telling me between the two guys that what do you see in Manny that you're saying he's done, Dusty?
He took a beating from Margarito.
Marquez. También.
Let me finish. He took a beating from Margarito. Okay, he had to go to the hospital. He does not recover. You do not recover from these things that fast. He's fighting every 3 or 4 months. One. Then Marquez slapped the crap out of him.
Yep.
Okay?
Yeah.
And he staggered him and he cut him. That's why I think there's an edge to Timothy Bradley beating him. You see?
Mm-hmm.
You look at Pacquiao and he's going through the motions, man. The man, his head is not in boxing anymore. See, you ask questions and all that, but you also got to observe and see the body language and what they say and how they react. Pacquiao looks old. If he's fooling me, well, then I'm a fool. But I think Bradley is going to give him a hard one.
You know what, Dusty, on that note, let's go and talk to Timothy Bradley. We'll come back to Dusty, who was at the press conference this past week. And, hey, Timothy Bradley. June 9th, Las Vegas against Manny Pacquiao. Mr. B, what do you got to say?
Yeah, I saw Devin Alexander. They said he was faster than me, and I proved him that he wasn't. You know, they say Manny's faster than me, and I have to prove that he's not. And, you know, he's very strong. You know, he's very determined, and, you know, he has a lot of experience, big fight experience as well. This is my first huge, huge major fight, you know, at the superstar level. So, you know, it's going to be a great fight, man. I'm really got to train hard for this fight.
So, in saying that, a huge fight like this, what do you see that he has to do to come into a fight of this magnitude?
Well, I know what I have to do. You know, one thing that I have to do is definitely tighten up my punches, you know, because I saw guys in the film that came out wide. One is Ricky Hatton. I like to come out wide, and he ended up getting knocked out. So, you know, I don't want to do that against Manny Pacquiao. But do I have to change some things? You know what, just strategy-wise, you know, I just have to prepare myself for my game plan and just make sure that I'm able to, if it's the game plan is to move, I need to be able to move for 12 rounds, no problem.
I mean, in the scope of fighting the fighters, a lot of guys say a big fight like this is a psychological transition. You've never been on this kind of stage. Prepare for it?
It's a fight. It's just like any other fight. You know, the lights and all that, I've been past that. I've already, you know, experienced, had my first fight on television, and, you know, I've already went through that. This is nothing new. It's a fight.
Timmy, you feel vindicated, you know, everything that's been said about you, what fights you could have, should have, and would have taken, and now you probably landed the biggest prize in the business.
Absolutely. I mean, boxing's not only, you know, just a... You know, two fighters getting in the ring. Boxing's a business. You know, we're in it for this business as well. You know, to take care of my family. So, you know, whatever happened in the past, a year ago, whatever I went through, I mean, it was worth it. You know, because look at me now. And where is that person at right now?
Did I read all that stuff that was said about you? Don't worry about it. Let's move on.
Absolutely. I did read all that stuff, and you know, it made me stronger. So, you know. I've learned that, you know, people have opinions and people don't know me, so they can say whatever they want about me, you know. But if you know me personally, if you were in the gym when I was training, if you follow me while I was running, then you would know me. So it really doesn't matter what you say. That's how I feel. I don't know. I don't know if I'm faster than him. I know I'm pretty quick, though.
Were you surprised that you were picked for this fight?
I was very surprised that I was picked for this fight because... I think I bring a lot to the table because I'm very hungry and determined, you know.
Okay, whatever.
You know, I think that this is the new blood, you know, versus the old blood. And that makes it very interesting for the fans because Manny's been on top for a very long time, and I'm like the new guy coming in, and I'm trying to take the throne. So it's interesting. Exactly.
Down the line, I mean, a lot of fighters talk. Would you eventually like to one day fight in Madison Square Garden?
Absolutely.
Quite a resume.
That's one of my goals in mind. In mind is to fight at Madison Square Garden. Absolutely. Come out here to New York and definitely put on a show for all the New York fans out here.
Yeah, fight against Manny, the star that he is. Do you feel that you have to maybe knock him out or just fight so overwhelming that you should sit?
I gotta hurt him. You know, I don't. You know. I try not to let the fight go to decision, you know. I mean, I fight extremely hard, but I gotta hurt this guy. Yeah.
What did you learn about Manny Pacquiao following his recent performance against Juan Manuel Marquez? Anything different?
No, you know what? I learned that Manny Pacquiao still, you know, has problem with Marquez, man. You know, you know, I mean, I've seen the two fights. You know, he had problems with them then, and same thing. You know, every time they fight, it's going to be the same issue because, you know, just styles make fights, you know. So, I mean, I'm not Marquez. I can't emulate Marquez, you know, and be like Marquez in the ring. You know, I can take some things that he, you know, did and worked for him. But, you know, I'm Tim Bradley, so I have my own style.
Now, going into this fight, okay, what do you think would be your biggest asset going inside the ring against a guy who's very elusive, throws punches from various different angles, and is very fast on his feet?
I'm young and energetic, and he hasn't fought a young, energetic fighter that's willing to take risk in the ring in a very long time.
Did you think that after he fought Marquez, you know,
obviously
the Mayweather fight was on the table, he doesn't fight Mayweather,
do
you think he was
going to
fight Marquez, or did you think he had a shot
against the
fight?
You know, after the Cotto fight, after the Cotto thing fell through, I felt I had a shot. The Marquez fight was still looming in the air, you know, they still were, you know, trying to get Marquez to take the fight, but he chose not to. But after the Cotto, after I heard that Cotto didn't want to, you know, squeeze down on for some balance, I might get it. Do you think they'll take it back on the ring or during fight night? Your religious, both of you are both religious guys.
I don't think religion have anything to do with the fight. Honestly, I really don't. You know, there's a lot of bad people out there that's doing a lot of great things. So, you know, I don't think religion has anything to do with. You know, I don't think God has like a, oh, I'm gonna pick him tonight or I'm gonna pick him tonight. I think it boils down to the person in here and how much work he put in, and if he earned it, he's gonna get the win.
Are you big on videos?
Dude, I'm a student, man. I'm a student of the game, so I love watching fights. Like, I've had a game plan for Manny Pacquiao for the last 3 years, you know? So, I mean, I'm a student of the game, man. I watch fighters from 140, 135, all up to 47, 54. Just, I watch that in that break. And I like to watch the big fights as well, but I love to watch and look at fighters' weaknesses and strengths and definitely come up with game plans.
How much looking at his tapes?
You know what? I've been following. I'm a Manny Pacquiao fan. I'm a fan of Manny Pacquiao, so I mean, of course, I'm gonna watch his film. I watched all of his film, all of his fights, majority all of his fights. You know, especially when he had the breakout moment when he fought against, you know, like Eric Morales, Marquez. I definitely watched those fights in all those trilogies.
Did this fight come at the perfect time for you as far as your maturation, your development, everything you've been through?
Absolutely. I'm coming off of two softball victories. I think that this is the perfect time for me. I'm 28. You know, I'm only getting older. You know, I don't want to get out of my prime before I, you know, take a fight like this. And, you know, I'm still growing as a fighter as well, you know. I haven't been really active and really busy, so there's not a lot of wear and tear on my body. You know, I fought, you know, three times in the last 2 years, 2.5 years. So, you know, I'm really disappointed at that. But, you know, now that I'm with Top Rank, I know that they're going to, you know, move me in a direction and make me a superstar in this game. And that's why the reason why I wanted to sign with Top Rank.
How much did the Alexander fight help prepare you for this, being a
Well, Alexander's pretty quick, man. He's pretty quick, but he wasn't quicker than me. You know, Alexander was not quicker than me, but he...
Speedy Southpaw.
You know, I don't think the Alexander fight. I think, you know what? I think that, but I do really think the Alexander fight definitely would help in this because Alexander was very fast in the ring. You know, a lot of movement. You know, he was a softball. You know, just dealing with softballs is difficult in itself because of the angles. You know, but, you know, I got Manny Pacquiao, man. I mean, he's like the king of angles. You know, he's here 1 minute, then he's here, then he's back over here, then he's over here. You know, throws punches, you know, going this way, pulls punches coming this way. I mean, you know, the guy's really clever. And, I was watching some of his films, and I just saw, like, some weird angle punches that he just, I mean, he lands these shots, and they're powerful.
Mm-hmm.
They're powerful shots, and I'm just like, wow, that's unbelievable.
And how do you plan to prepare for that? The various angles.
Baby, I'm elusive. I'm not just a face force rider, just come on, you know, hit me. No, I'm very elusive in the ring, you know. I'm not a stationary target, you know. If you're not elusive, if you try to be elusive, you're going to be elusive, you know. If you're moving your head, you're not going to get hit as much.
Is there much made of the transition from original fighter to fighter softball?
It's a tough transition because you don't see a whole lot of softballs. So it is a tough transition, and it's a battle of angles. It's a battle of angles. And you know, I know that in my training camp I'm going to have a lot of sparring partners, you know, different lefties, ones that come forward, ones that, you know, throw a lot of punches. And I definitely want to get a few amateurs in there because, you know, Manny likes to throw a lot of punches. And amateurs, first four rounds, you know, they're going to be blazing fast. And they're going to be throwing combinations. So I got to be able to deal with that type of tempo.
What do you think of the Alexander Madonna fight line?
Alexander is going to outbox Madonna. I know Madonna has the punching power. He can definitely close the gap on Alexander. But I think that from his last two fights, I think that he's grown as a fighter. And he's going to be mentally prepared for the challenge ahead. So I'm going to pick Devin Alexander, the boxer. He's going to outbox him.
What did you say about Madonna that he didn't care about going to his hometown after? I know it's something that you didn't want to do. He's gotten decisions there that, you know, were a little questionable. What do you think about that?
Madonna's just looking to beat the best. That's all he's doing, you know. I think that's all he's doing. He's willing to go to his hometown. I guess they get, you know, paid him really well, and he doesn't have a problem fighting anybody, anywhere, anytime, any place, anywhere. So, you know.
The name for you, TV, Floyd Mayweather.
Floyd Mayweather. He's the best. The best fighter in the world.
You get past this one? Like to have him next?
Yeah, absolutely. Mayweather,
I've always said if Mayweather's in the game, I'll be the first fighter to beat him. I swear, I said it. I got it on film, so, and I'm saving. Yeah, I got it on record, so, and this was like early in my career, and I mean, you know, I know people might laugh at me and think that I'm stupid. You know, he thinks he can beat Mayweather, but I, you know, I've always had faith in my ability and always had faith in myself, so, you know, I feel that I can compete with anybody, man. So you got to prove me wrong. You have to prove me wrong.
With every fight that you've had, ever since you've won the world title from Junior Ritter in England a couple years ago, every fight that you've had, you've gotten better and progressed with each and every single fight.
Yeah.
How do you plan on taking, now even though you've improved with every fight, how do you plan on taking it to the next level, the elite level against Manny Pacquiao?
Well, you know, one of the problems I have with my trainer is he says, why do you always fight to the level of your opposition? I know you can do more. You know, I know you can get this guy out of here a lot sooner than that, you know. And I said, I don't know why. I really don't know why, you know. But Manny Pacquiao, I'm going to have to bring my A game, you know, and it's going to come out. It's going to come out. I mean, it has to come out, you know. I know what I'm capable of doing because I have been pushed to that edge, you know, to that limit. And so I know what I'm capable of doing. I know that I can compete with this guy, you know. So I think that he's going to bring it out of me. I honestly do. I just think he's going to bring the best out of me.
Manny Pacquiao is the best. Everybody knows it's no secret. He has a seek-and-destroy type of persona when he's inside the ring. Completely different from when he's outside the ring. Do you think he can bring that out of you? Will you?
Absolutely.
Could you match Manny?
I'm always seeking to destroy, man. That's what I do. I just seek and destroy, man. You know, It doesn't matter. Like, Manny Pacquiao is the biggest name in boxing, you know, next to Floyd Mayweather, but it's a name, man. He's a fighter. He's a human being. You know, he has skill. I have skill. I mean, I'm not, like, in awe, like, when I see Manny Pacquiao, you know, I'm just... It's another fight. It's another fight to me, you know. Take away all the cameras, take away, you know, all the attention, the media. Put us in the ring. It's a fight. I'm just saying, it's a fight. You know, it's just a fight for me.
45 minutes, take it away.
It's a fight for me, you know.
What brought you to the top, Mike?
Superstar. I want to be a superstar, you know. I didn't get in this game just to be, you know, three-time world champion, unknown, no one knows who I am. You know, I want to be a superstar. I want to be at the very best, the very top. And top rank, they've proven over and over and over that they're the best. You know, they built Oscar De La Hoya. They built, you know, Hearns, I mean, Hagler, Mayweather. I mean, all the best in the world. I mean, top rank has had them. So that's the reason why I signed with top rank.
Besides watching film, how else have you been training and fighting amateurs? Like conditioning, preparing yourself mentally?
You know what? I always try to stay in great shape. You know, I'm always strength and conditioning all the time. I always feel that, you know, I always can get better. So, you know, I got a strict strength and conditioning trainer all the time. He's always busting my butt, you know, a couple of days out of the week. And then I'm always running as well. So I like to run. So I'm running 3 days a week. Plus strength and conditioning training a couple of days out of the week as well.
When you run distance or time?
I run time. Mm-hmm. I run time and distance, you know, and I break it up, man. I break it up. So, like, maybe for a month, I'll run nothing but distance. And then the following month, I'll switch it up. I'll have, you know, hill running. I'll have sprint workouts. I'll have sand running. You know, I'll run on the grass. I mean, you know, I just switch it up. And I condition myself. So, like, 24/7, you're going to see me. I'm going to be out conditioning myself. I'm going to be out running by myself. I'm not going to have this huge entourage of people, a dog, or anything. It's just me. It's just me with my headset on, and I'm gone.
Why do you think Mayweather's better?
Mayweather, it's smart. He's smart. He's a very smart fighter. You know, he's very fast. He's, you know, he's clever at what he do. He's very clever at what he do. He's the best at it. So, you know, that's why I think he's better than you know, Pacquiao. I mean, I would love to see the fight. Pacquiao, I think, would still give him a great fight. But I just think that Mayweather is just very smart, man. He's a very smart, intelligent fighter, and you need this to win fights.
Doc Stanley, Sports Network, the Blake Ritter, Rainbow Soul, the channel, Sports Network, the show, Timothy Bradley. Dusty, anything in there he said that makes you more confident that you will say now that he will beat Pacquiao?
Who?
Freddie.
Well, yeah. Well, I'm telling you that I saw a Pacquiao, like I said, you know, everything is perception. You got to understand that. Everything is perception and reflection and how a fighter reacts, you know. And from what I've seen, a Timothy Bradley has a good chance to beat a Pacquiao. Now, you got to remember, Timothy Bradley has been in some wars where he's overcome. Knockdowns, Kendall Holt almost killed him. He got up and beat
Kendall.
No, it's
funny you said that. He said Kendall Holt, I remember watching that fight in my beloved Brazil in Fortaleza. And he said Kendall Holt is the second hardest puncher that he ever fought. He said he's the African guy. He said he still feels chills. But go ahead, Doug.
Right. He still feels the puncher from the African guy. That was funny.
Yeah.
Kendall Holt. And then when the worlds collide, the two top 140-pounders, Devon and Bradley. Bradley slapped the crap out of him until this guy, no mas, in the 11th round. And he fought a welterweight as a testing ground. And the guy was 35-0 with something like 18 knockouts. They beat the crap out of him. So this young turf, this young thug or whatever you want to call him, has all the confidence and the ability and the youth to beat what I feel, again, perception. This is what you got to understand. An aging Pacquiao. Why? Because Pacquiao has been fighting every 3 or 4 months. His body has not rested. And those battles have been wars. It takes a lot out of him. Now,
Can I get in on this quickly?
Let me finish. And in comparison, sure, people labeling Cotto shot because, and Teddy Atlas with all this nonsense, shot because of the two horrendous knockouts he suffered at the hands of a suspicious Margarito and or...
Vicious, not suspicious about that
motor. Yes, suspicious Margarito with dirty gloves, and, of course, he got Puerto Rican stupid, and he wanted to trade shots with Pacquiao. If he had boxed Pacquiao, he would have beaten him. Okay? That's my perception.
What I'm trying to tell you is that
the perception of how I feel that Bradley has a chance, as well as I feel that Cotto with
I agree with you. Like I said, I got not only I can't. People can't keep hearing me agreeing with you. So please stop now.
Hey, can I get in on this talk?
But Dusty, go ahead, Rooney.
First of all, I didn't know if that was an interview or this is your life. Number two, I got to say, I really can't.
Rooney, I want to say this. Sports and Death, the Doc Stanley Show. I want to say that, okay? Go ahead, Rooney.
Go ahead, Earl.
Mm-hmm. I think it was a great interview. Lee Samuels said that, and he answered just so many great questions, and to get an interview of that length, of that quality, it is something we had to have, especially with mic on, lights off, and when you get through, Rooney, I wanted Harold, go ahead, Rooney, because I want Harold.
I'll be brief, Doug. I know I'm not going to take up all the time. No, I'm just going to say, you know, I agree with Dusty that Pacquiao really hasn't had, you know, a whole lot of rest lately. He has been fighting pretty frequently. But I'm sorry. I just can't get excited about Timothy Bradley. I'm sorry. I can't get excited about Timothy Bradley.
Rooney, but you know what? Harold, how much did it bother you when you heard Timothy Bradley say, I'm a Pacquiao fan?
Well, I mean, you know, the thing is Pacquiao can fight. And the fact that Timothy Bradley is in there with Pacquiao. See what happens in those kind of fights? Pacquiao's been on top for a long time. Timothy Bradley has never been on top, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And when you get hit by one of those pros that's been on top, and you've never been hit before, it's a different type of punch. It's a different type of punch and different type of strength that comes to the table. And when Timothy Bradley get hit by him, and he's been knocked down already a couple of times in fights and everything, he's going to realize that where he's at. And believe me, Manny Pacquiao can punch with that left hand, even with that right hand. So basically, Timothy's got a lot of heart. He's going to be gamed and all that. But he's not smart, and that's the bad part about him. He's not different having a lot of heart, aggressive, but not being smart. And one thing about Pacquiao, he's smart. And he knows how to fight. Well, Timothy doesn't. It's going to be a nice little fight. Timothy's going to win a couple of rounds in it, but what he's going to do, he's going to realize when he starts getting banged up and he's starting getting hit with those shots by Manny Pacquiao, he's going to fall apart. And that's my thing. Now my man Cotto, I'm going with Lady A. Cotto's going to beat
Mayweather.
My point is that Mayweather, you guys just don't know, but Mayweather is only an imitation of his father and his uncle. That's all he is. And they won't
Is he better than him?
He's an imitation of his father and his uncle.
He's
no better. No, I'm telling you. Okay. Do you hear what I'm saying? He's an imitation.
Answer the question, Harold. Just answer the question, son.
You're not listening to me. He's an imitation of his uncle and his father. That's all he is.
Absolutely.
Some imitations are better, Harold.
He ain't doing nothing different.
The problem is
the fighters today ain't no good. That's all it is. But
right.
He ain't that great. And Cotto, if Cotto fights anywhere like he did his last fight, anywhere like he did his last fight, he's got a shot of beating Mayweather. He's bigger. He's got more confidence, and believe me, if he do anything like he did and he gives me that kind of showing, believe me, because one thing that y'all will not understand, Mayweather does not throw 100 punches around.
No,
he
doesn't
even throw 50 punches around. He does not.
Okay.
He doesn't work like that. His thing is picking shots, waiting, and trying to catch punches. And if Cotto keeps that distance where he can punch all the time and slip punches like he did in the last fight and move and come back and move, believe me, he will beat Floyd Mayweather.
Okay,
Floyd does not throw no punches.
Rainbow Soul, the Champ Sports Network Show. I love them both. I'm going with Mayweather. And it wasn't until 1940 that the image of African American first appeared on U.S. postage stamp. These days, new entries are coming thick and fast. And as we continue Black History Month, and we're going to just go back. The first African American stamp issued was Booker T. Washington in 1940. 1963, celebrating the liberating document century during the Civil Rights, we had the Emancipation Proclamation stamp. That stamp was 5 cents then, too, Harold. 1967, we had Frederick Douglass, the former slave of the Blitzers. 1973, the first black artist representing the White House collection. That was Henry O. Tanner. 1978, Harriet Tubman. And in 1979, the youngest man ever to win the Nobel Peace Prize. I, by the grace of God, had a chance to see him live. Dr. King's stamp was issued. 1982, one of America's greatest diplomats, the first African-American to win the Nobel Peace Prize, Ralph Bunche. 1985, the stamps continued, and it was Miss Bethune. And 1986, Matthew Henson, the man who got to the South Pole first. 1987, John Jean Baptiste. 1982, honoring the founder of the WNCA, W.E. Du Bois. The 1990 stamp, 2 years before that, was the first man to win 4 gold medals at the Olympics. Man, I was able to meet personally, Mr. Jesse Owens. 1995, wow, Louis Satchmo, the ambassador, and considered the greatest trumpet player of all time. 1997, a holiday created for 1906, where we had the Kwanzaa stamp come along. That was 32 cents. 1998, the star of the Ward Singers, Clara Ward, was honored. In 1999, the close friend of Muhammad Ali and his mentor when he entered the nation, none other than Malcolm X. So there we have the history and the names of African Americans who have been put on stamps. Again, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back and talk later. We've got to talk a little sports and death, trust in God, Hall of Fame. Don't anybody move. Now we're going to talk some baseball. We'll talk to you about your reflection on this thing with the MVP who had that thing overturned. Doc Stanley, sports and death. They're all here. Don't nobody move. As we continue Black History Month, Doc Sandy Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul Channel, Sports Network Show, Miles Dewey Davis, Kinda Blue is the name of the album that was
considered the greatest jazz album of all time and some of the most renowned jazz artists of all time. Miles Dewey Davis on trumpet, John Coltrane on tenor sax, Cannonball Adderley on alto sax, Joe Philly Jones on drums, Paul Chambers on the bass, and Red Garland, who fought Ray Robinson, is on some of the cuts, but Paul Chambers is the man that played most of the piano selections. Lady A, you got a chance to, because DocSendySports.com, as you know, the Trust in God Sports Death Hall of Fame here. Your thoughts on your visit here, Lady A?
Doc, you got so many baseballs there. It's unbelievable. I was just blown away. I told Sea Wings the other night, I still cannot believe I held the actual hockey stick of Gordie Howe.
Well, that's not his stick, but that's the autograph stick by Gordie. You know, it's funny you say that, because it was through Julius Erving that I first met Rod Joubert. Turquoise Erving, my daughter's grandmother, always threw a party for him. And in fact, I had met Gordie before I met Rod, and we became friends. You know, the thing, you know, and when you left too, I got an Ollie Smith autograph baseball for you. And she was, she said, Doc, I just, you know,
I couldn't stay here, Doc. I was just getting too emotional. I had to leave.
You know, it she just touched my heart. She said, you know, Doc, she reminded me of John. And she said, no, Doc, you know, this is, she said, you can't box this stuff up. You can't put it away. It has to be shown. The stories, it's part of your life. It's part of your time. And, I keep looking around. I changed it to entertainment because I have an autographed photo of Ella Fitzgerald. The CD is autographed by Grover Washington Jr. and Tony Bennett, as well as the autographed Tony Bennett album. You know, the first time I ever saw Whitney Houston, she was watching me perform at Sweetwater's as I was opening stand-up comic for her mother. And then the next time and last time I saw Whitney, she was at the Radio City Music Hall when Roy Jones Jr. had the only fight that's ever been there, her and her husband, Bobby Brown. Is there anything particular that you liked or that caught your eye, Lady A? It was such an honor. And thank you too. We got a Sports in Depth cap. Want to thank you for that. But anything that particularly stood out?
Doc, man, I just so much stuff. I was just like, I couldn't even. All those. What are you gonna do with all those baseballs, Doc?
Well, we got a case of.
We kept turning around, and you kept finding more baseballs you didn't even know you had.
You know, she's right. She came up. She looked at this ball, Doc, and I looked, and there's another. Another Joe DiMaggio autographed baseball with Tom Seaver. I found one.
Too much,
Doc.
That's fucking
loud. Yeah, we're going to get it. And, Nat, since we're in the baseball, let's just go down.
Oh, my God, Doc. Yeah, I saw the Derek Jeter, the cleats, and the Curtis Martin cleats.
Oh, yeah. You know, Derek.
You didn't even know you had him there.
Curtis Martin, the oldest man to win. Another African-American first a star in the Black History Month. The oldest man to win an NFL rushing crown. And the man who he supplanted was the late, great Marion Motley, who played for the Cleveland Browns. My dad said, you know, with the automatic autogram, Marion Motley, and Derek Jeter. Oh, it's way back in 06. I said, Derek, can I get it back? He said, Doc, you know what, let me put a little box together for you. He handed me some spikes and a bat. And I said, Derek Jeter, where's number two? Derek Jeter is second to none as a man, as a human being, as a shortstop. All you need to know is that the greatest all-around shortstop in the history of baseball, when he came to the Yankees, he had to play third base. Because Sanderson Jeter was there. Go ahead, Lady.
Doc, I was going to say, you know, one of the things that really, I knew I really had to leave your house?
But,
no, I really. When you show me that old baseball glove from way back in the day.
Oh, she, that old
baseball glove. Remember the small you showed me?
Yeah. The one that Dusty played with in grade school. Yeah.
Yeah, that one. That
it's funny you said it because
I was
that glove.
Teammates with Ty Cobb.
But hey, you were spitting tobacco together. The glove I found that glove is autographed. That glove is autographed by Joe Black, the first black pitcher in the World Series game. Ralph Barranca, who threw the home run to Bobby Thompson, who's on that glove.
Bobby Thompson.
Enos Slaughter, who's a Hall of Famer, is on that glove. And I got two other names I got to look on the paper there. Maybe I run in and grab it and find out who that was. But it was, she came, and we want to thank her. You know, gang, she's got us a Sports in Depth cap that I got to get a picture of and send it down so Lady D can put it up. We've got a lot of time here left before we get to the mic on, lights off. Doc,
you have a lot of time. Let me say something then, Doc, right quick.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, you want to do the station ID? Go right ahead, Doc.
Yeah, no, go ahead, Winnie, come on in, because
I've said this to you privately, and I've said this to Lady A privately. I'm going to share this with our vast audience, if I may. Doc,
okay.
It seems that you have a signed baseball from every significant pitcher that ever played the game, a signed bat from every significant hitter that ever played the game,
yes,
a signed football or wraps or knee pads from every significant football player that ever played the game, assigned basketball or basketball shoes or wraps or something from any significant basketball player that ever played the game, and a pair of boxing gloves, boxing shoes, and wraps or autographed pitcher from every significant boxer that ever played the game ever boxed.
Don't forget tennis racket, autographed pitcher by Peggy Fleming, the figure skater.
Lady A, it was with Doc and his crew the first time I ever met in person, and this is a name from the past that I know you'll know, Lady A, being damn near a tennis pro yourself, Michael Chang.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, man, you know what? I got the picture of me. You know what? Gang, it's just all blessings and good luck. I got
it's
that
just
picture
too much.
You, Rooney, you, Michael Chang, the great Larry Hardesty, the voice that opens our show here, the greatest African sportscast in the history of New York City radio, makes him the greatest of all time, and his son, Shamari, as we were sitting there, you know, and Michael Chang, he won the French Open. I think he's the last American to win the French Open. And here's the voice of none other than Larry Hardesty.
Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blick.
Larry, him and his son is in that picture. You know, it's memories. It's 3 decades of, and Marion Boykin tells a story. He says he was out someplace with his son, and he said, "What's that?" He said, "You know, Doc." He said, "Doc, I call this stuff at home." He says, and they gave it to him. Paulette Bruno tells a funny story. The first time she went to the Boxing Hall of Fame, and it was in its inception, and it was a little small room, and she turned to her husband, Robert, and she says, "Mel has more stuff like this. Mel's got more stuff." At his house.
Oh,
and
my God.
He got more stuff than this.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
It's work to be
oh
done.
Oh, my God. Help. You're not even talking about, you're talking about cleats, Rooney. You haven't even gotten to the sneakers. I couldn't even believe how big Hakeem Olajuwon's sneaker was. They had in there.
Yeah,
and
you
know, and
Steve
Blazer said, I remember it was at this time, the All-Star time, the Rockets came in to play the Knicks. And I had asked him, I said, "Akeem, could I have those sneakers?" You know, didn't give me. He said, "No, you know, I'm going to need those." And then, only by the grace of God, that's what's always stressed. As the game is ending, I'm just walking behind him to go into the clubhouse. And he turns to me and says, "Hey, you know, you can have those sneakers." Larry Bird, I remember I asked Larry, and later on I found Larry's such a big jazz fan, and Larry said, "You know, it depends how bad I tear him up at the end of the game." The first pair I ever got from Michael, he gave me a pair for my son because Mel had been in a car accident, and he gave me him, he said, you know, give these people. In fact, that was the time that Michael Jordan was the guy that implemented the concept of wearing black sneakers for the playoffs. You know, you went, and now it's war. But I remember Bill Cartwright didn't have a pair of black sneakers. Rooney, check this out. He had a black magic marker. He was coloring his white sneakers black with the magic marker.
Well, you know, Doc, it's because of you that I have a real quick story about Cartwright. I was with you, and you ever wanted me to get some press with somebody to say, "Okay, I'm going to interview Jordan. It's my first time I'm going to get a chance to meet him. Let me see the great Michael." Well, I go down there with you, Doc. There's about 40 reporters in front of his mic. I said, "I'm not going to get by all these guys." I said, "Let me do something offbeat. Everybody's also around Scottie Pippen. Let me find somebody, Bill Cartwright." Now, keep in mind, Doc, I have to tell you, Bill stands about 7'2".
at about 275. I said,
number one rookie
in
history of
statistics. I said, let me interview Cartwright. Everybody's so thrilled with Michael and Scotty. Let me interview Bill. I said, interview. Doc, I follow the guy about 10 steps. And I say, okay, perfect. I'm going to corner him and get an interview. Now, Doc, the guy makes a right turn, and all of a sudden he's gone, vanished, finished. And I'm like, only I could lose a 7'2", 275-pound center. Only
you see
me.
The body slam, Rooney, you'd have had him, baby, up the top rope.
I'm in the black tights tonight. Sorry for the ID. I'm in the black tights tonight.
No, Ken, we'll keep rolling here. No, keep the black tights on your horse top rope. Lady A and she's riding the TKO Harold split decision, and we got to find a horse for Nat. The Sea Wings won't be with us tonight. The Hoopster from the top of the key. We got a final on that All-Star game.
Yeah, 152-149. Kevin Durant got MVP, 36 points.
Oh.
And Kobe Bryant set a record for 271 points, all-time All-Star record.
Wow.
271,
hey,
said, Hoopster?
Yeah, 271. He broke Michael Jordan's record.
Wow.
Kobe is a true assassin in every sense of the word, sports-wise speaking. Kobe is an assassin in the sports sense of the word. He really is.
Something else, man.
And Dusty, I know you're writing that 271 to take down the Consuelo tomorrow down at the Bodega. Put a dollar for me, man. Quit playing.
But yeah. No, I'm gonna take it over to California, the Puerto Rican Grammys. Oh, the Puerto Rican Oscars.
We want to salute in Black History Month to member of the Assembly, 57th District, Kings County, Hakeem Jeffries. I got a chance to speak to him about two or three weeks ago as he was visiting my mother's church, the legendary Cornerstone Baptist Church. We're going to have him in, but we wanted to salute him. I also have my man Dave Goodson, top photographer. As you know, we will definitely, with the gang here and Black History Month, want to keep going. In fact, you know, some of the inventions done by African Americans, the elevator, the stoplight, the cell phone. African Americans, I got to get let's get the names from, were the ones first open heart surgery, African American, Vivian Thomas, surgery down in from the heart and other measures that were advantageous to help. As we know, also everybody knows about Jackie Robinson, and can we never forget that Larry Doby also was the first African American in the American League and the first African American to win a World Series and the first African American to lead the league in home runs and RBIs. Nat, you're here. Your thoughts, your reflections as MVP Braun now has been exonerated, but there's some uproars. They think it was a technicality. They don't think it was true. What's your thoughts as you are our other baseball expert here, our Peter Gammons, and as I call you, Roberto, your thoughts on that, Nat? Are you happy with the decision? I remember somebody said on the news yesterday that somewhere Barry Bonds is smiling. Your thoughts and reflections, Nat?
Well, Doc, I think it's real simple. He got a good lawyer. If I get in trouble, I'll try to look up that lawyer and get that same type of legal counsel. I mean, I think it was definitely a technicality. I mean, he wasn't even, you know, I don't really see him being innocent at all. He's just not guilty because, like, if a police pulls you over and they and you were speeding, but they didn't follow the procedure. That's my thoughts on it. And he got a good lawyer. So
now, can you talk more to us about your project, the Roberto Clemente Project, as African American month? And I remember one of the things that Clemente was always proud about is being Puerto Rican and being black. For my money, the greatest right fielder that ever lived. Give us some insight on what you're doing and some insight on the great Roberto Walker Clemente.
Okay, yeah. Well, basically, I've just been interviewing a number of people from former teammates to fans to family members, and just trying to track down the legacy of Roberto Clemente, because a lot of people know his name. There's actually more parks, more public places in the United States, North America, named after Roberto Clemente than any other athlete. But when you ask people who is Roberto Clemente, they might not even know where he's from. They say, oh, was he from the Dominican Republic? He died in a car accident. No, they don't even know that he's Puerto Rican, that he died in an airplane accident delivering release applies to Nicaragua. So there's a lot of things people don't know about Roberto Clemente, and basically we're trying to track down his legacy and why is Roberto Clemente important. The other thing is, I'm talking to a good number of Puerto Ricans, especially black Puerto Ricans, is they feel like a lot of times, or not they, but the ones that I've spoken to, there's a large feeling that people forget that Roberto Clemente was black. People may know that he is Latino, but especially when he's celebrated in Puerto Rico, that a lot of times I've been told like that his shin is that his skin is shed, so to speak, that he's celebrated as a Puerto Rican, but it's often forgotten, or not necessarily forgotten, but not talked about in the dialogue that he was a black Puerto Rican. So that's, I mean, there's a lot of different elements, but those are some of the elements in a nutshell.
Yeah, from Carolina, the great Roberto Clemente, Carolina, 21.
Puerto Rico. There's a street there named Clemente, Barrio Clemente or something like that. And his last name was Roberto Clemente Walker. So that's basically his whole history there. My mother was from Carolina, and they were old-time neighbors with his parents.
Really?
But, yeah. Old-time neighbors with his parents. And, yes, he was dark, but people, you know, they mistakenly think you come from Puerto Rico, you got to be olive oil or white, man. But they don't know how black you can be and still be a Puerto Rican. Man.
We come in all shapes and sizes and colors, baby.
Yep.
The thing about Roberto, I remember Roberto Welcome. I remember that they down at that gym, Dusty, and the guy made me start talking. I was surprised the guy made me that. I meant to tell him about the show tonight. I had to email him, and I didn't. I sent him a copy of the show. And, you know, the thing with Roberto, and I think it says a lot about Puerto Rico, and according to him, one of the things that really took Roberto back was how bad African-Americans, Negroes, back in the day, I guess Negroes, blacks were treated simply because they were black. You know, it was astonishing to him that, you know, he said, you know, because the one thing about Latins per se, and a guy told me one time, too, he said, you know, Doc, you know, he said, you know, I understand, you know, you're going, you know, you're permanent resident in Brazil, you know, you're like citizen, you're going to be living here, but don't think that there's no racism in Brazil. And I said, ho, I'm not naive to that. I'm not to the point that, but understand that there's racism all over, but in America, you know, everything you do is based on black and white. That's the bottom line. You know, other countries, you know, you can financially get out. And this is the line that Ali said, one of the great lines. I read you one line today, Ali's other line. Service to others is rent you pay for your room work. The late, great Art Russ told me. He's at a meeting with Ali. And this affluent African-American gets up and speaks and sits down. And Ali has said before, in America, no matter how rich you are, no matter how famous you are, no matter how much a philanthropist you are, in the eyesight of white of America, you're always just another nigga. It's a sad comedy. Bill Vergen, I'll never forget this story. Bill wrote this great story about Ali. And he ended the story, and he said, Ali has been a champion three times where some people have never been once, and he's made millions where some people have never made one. And I see Bill, the same day Ernie Shea was up there with us. And once again, just blessed by the great Doc Stanley Sports Network with the Blake Ritter, Network Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports Network, the show, they're here, Harold Weston Jr., the First Lady, Lady A, Mel Coco, Howard Cosell Smith, the Hoopster from the top of the key, hitting another three, the Stainless Baby Lords, and Big Nat Clemente is with us tonight. And you know, it was a thing where Bill, I said, Bill, what a great story, man. He said, Mel, I wasn't a doctor then. You won't believe how hard it was for me to get that story in. I said, but it was Ali. He said, Mel, when they found out it wasn't your typical broke, down on his luck black story, they didn't want it in. Didn't want it in. You know, and Roberto was just stunned. I mean, my uncle Arnold said he couldn't believe he's from Suriname, and when the boats hit a certain water, they pull out a fountain. One said black, one said white. Joe Namath, up at the greatest sports artist of our generation of all times, Leroy Neiman. And I was talking to Joe, and I said, Joe, I said, you know, going to Alabama must have been a transition. He said, transition? He said, transition? He said, it was a culture shock. He said, I had never seen anything like that.
Wow.
Black and white bathrooms, black and white. He said it was a culture shock. I had heard that had Joe known that, there's a very good chance he wouldn't have went to Alabama.
You know what my one experience, Doc, if I could share this with the panel, was?
Yeah.
My first time going down south, my mother had a friend from church that they had to go visit in Texas. True story. Mm-hmm. And it was myself and my brother. I was like maybe 7 years old, and my brother was maybe like, I'm going to venture to say about 4 or 5 years old. And we're all in my father's, at that time, I guess if you want to call it SUV, right, Jeep, and we're driving down south, which, it was quite a hike for us to do by car, but my mother she was adamant about going seeing her friends down from church and whatever. They had this get-together, so we were going to go. Do you believe that my one experience about down south was that I could not believe I was so hungry as a kid. My mom, my dad, myself, and my grandmother, my brother, we get out of the car, we go to get something to eat. And do you believe that we went to the table and they didn't even want to serve us?
Yep,
they did not even, I'll never forget that because I always remember that story because I was so hungry. And my mom and my father ended up going at the guy and saying, I'm here with two children and my wife. He's like, we're hungry, and they didn't want to serve us. My father had to get in the car again and find another place where they would serve us. Could you believe that?
Yeah.
How about me as a soldier?
Dusty tells the story of here's a guy in uniform.
Wearing my soldier's uniform.
And what did they tell you? What did they tell you, Dusty?
In the Trailway bus and in the Greyhound bus, once we got to, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the geographical identification.
The Mason-Dixie line?
The Mason-Dixie line. Once we got to the Mason-Dixie line, this guy stops the Greyhound, and I'm saying, wait a minute, but there's no way station, no toilet, no.
Right.
And then he says, well, fellas, this is not my doing, but this is the law of the land. You know, all you colored boys, now we're not soldiers. All you colored boys will have to move to the back. And all the other soldiers will have to move to the front. I said, are you kidding me? And sure enough, pick up my duffel bag and pick up my stuff, and boom. Now, this is the coup de grace. He goes into his, what we call a glove compartment or whatever the heck it was, and he brings out the sign with the chain, and it runs across the bus. It says, colored only. Can you imagine that? That was in the Greyhound and the Trailway bus. I'm saying to myself, wait a minute. This is 1958, 59. Rosa Parks had the bus boycott in 55. What happened to that bus boycott? These people ain't changed for shit, man.
Hey, my man said, hey, buddy, you ain't Rosa Parks.
crazy. You're good enough to fight for the country, but they couldn't even.
Right.
Well, here's another story. Look at all the guys in Vietnam. Look at all the black soldiers in Vietnam. What we're going to do, too, I'm going to, like, cut it, and we're going to start with the mic on, lights off, so it'll be aired some. You know, here's the guys who go to Vietnam, okay? Okay. And in 1965, okay, black people couldn't vote in 1965. So guys could go to Vietnam and get killed. Dr. King won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1964, and the man couldn't vote in his own country. Gang, don't move.
Doc, bodies coming in from other wars were not allowed to be buried in white cemeteries, man. I mean,
Say again, Dusty, what'd you say?
The soldiers coming back from World War II and all those Korean wars and all that, if they were Southerners and black, they were not allowed to be buried in the white cemeteries. We had to find somewhere to dump them. I mean, these are soldiers, man.
Wow.
I mean, this is a hard way to go.
Boys and Dead. Gang, hold on. What we're going to do, we're going to close out here and come back with mic on, lights off. Three thoughts. Live your life today. Live the sin before God tomorrow. Life's just consistent. The most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? Service to others, to which you pay for your space on earth. I said be safe in the bottom of my heart. God bless you all and trust in God. And DocStanleySports.com, trust in God, Sports Death Hall of Fame. Don't nobody move. Larry Hardesty. Come on now.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day. Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solo Channel. First up of the show, mic on, lights off. We're here. Dear Lord.
Yes.
Thank you. Name it up, Jesus. Amen. Gang, let it flow. Say what we got to say. It's mic on, lights off, and it's Black History Month. And we're talking about some of the trials and tribulations
I think I told you the story.
Hold on, Dustin. Just kidding a minute.
Yeah.
I Rise. You know, the thing that the slaves had to learn how to read upside down. The fool of master. They had to read in candlelight, as it was against the law for slaves to learn how to read. And when we went to church, they had to sit upstairs. They couldn't sit down on the floor with everybody else. And, you know, New York City had one of the toughest slave. Oh man, going up. Hey, mic on, lights off. Dusty's going to kick it off. I think Nat left us, but I hope
he stayed
with us.
I'm here still.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
Dusty, start it off. Go ahead, Dusty.
Yeah, well, I remember, first of all, it's very interesting. I don't know if you guys ever got hold of the Mandingo series written by Kyle Anstott, which was a history of slavery and the whole nine yards, but fictional, but it was true to life. But anyway, personal experience. I remember the first time I was in Fort Dix. I stayed in Fort Dix. I could hang out in the city. Heck no. I got shipped to Fort Benning, Columbus, Georgia, the infantry capital of the world. My first day, first reveille, Sergeant Major Bumpus, the guy looked like a Rottweiler in the heat of the night.
Huh.
And he comes up. No, I'm serious, man. He comes up and he says, after roll call, you know, first platoon here, second platoon, accounting for. He said, well, the following boys will report to Sergeant Jones. You know, I'm using that name. And I looked over to Sergeant Jones, a black sergeant, three up, three down. I mean, this guy's sharp. He had all scrambled eggs all over, special forces, the whole nine yards. Okay. So he's calling out names. Robinson, Williams, Jones, Johnson, what? And I see nothing but the brothers. I said, oh, my Lord. Oh, my Lord, segregation. Oh, my Lord. So, boom. Florencio McPherson. Now, I say Florencio because Florencio and I used to be boxers together, a Panamanian, a good fighter, but they called him out. Okay, boom. They were marching to a Quonset Hut type of building. I said, oh, my God, what's going to happen to these guys? Sure enough, 45 minutes later, Florencia comes up, out of hell with this crap, man. I'm going to go AWOL, man. You know, we can't go into town. We cannot go out with white broads. We can't go here. We can't go there. And, you know, hypocritical me, I said, well, geez, I'm so sorry, man. I mean, what happened? You know, I'm complacent. So the next day, the following boys will report to Lieutenant Gonzalez. I said, uh-oh. So Rodriguez, Rivera, Martinez, Lois. I said, oh, shit. And I already knew. They marched to the Quonset Hut, and Gonzalez says, look, I'm a lieutenant, special forces. They made me somebody. I belong to, I could take care of my wife and my kids and all that, but we have to follow the law of the land. We borrow this land to make you the greatest fighting soldiers for our freedom and our liberty. Wow, what hypocrisy. But if you get in trouble, you break the law, you go into the wrong part of town, we're not going to help you. Your language in jail and mommy and daddy's going to have to get you a lawyer to get you out. And this is the first time in my life. And write this down. I don't know if you people heard it. If you are caught looking at a girl admiringly, you can be caught, you can be arrested for disturbing the peace, which meant reckless eyeballing. Did you ever hear of that?
What?
Reckless eyeballing.
It's Dusty. I want you to say, first, Say that again. First say it in Spanish, then say it in English one more time.
Reckless
eyeballing, mirando bien apasionado a una mujer blanca. I'm telling you, man. Reckless eyeballing. Can you people ever heard of that? No. Reckless, and that was disturbing the peace, and you would have wound up in jail.
In the background, we're going to be continuing playing some different jazz artists as we listen to some of the stories and continue Black History Month and continue with Sports in Depth. That is Miles Davis in the background. A couple of names for you real quick. And, you know, Dusty, I got a story for you, too, man. You know, I was in Thailand, and I had contemplated Max.
Let me just give you this. I have to be very honest that I'm glad, and God forgive me, and you people forgive me, that I lived through it. I experienced it. I couldn't imagine how ridiculous it was by just reading about it. I lived through this, and I went home, and I told my mom, I said, mijo, just behave yourself, obey the law. Go ahead, Doc.
To a certain degree, though, Dusty, you know, you look back down these Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul Channel, Sports Network, the show, mic on, lights off. You know, people really can't, you know, it's not until you go into the military that you see overt blatant racism, you know.
Exactly.
And then when you come into the police department and you go into the fire department, then you see it part two.
Fire, police, same crap,
you know,
man.
And now, real quick, some names for you as we continue Black History. Lena Horne, born 1917, passed in 2010, legendary singer, dancer, actress, and activist. Gorgeous lady she was.
Absolute
first, spot. Here's a man who's very close to my heart. Arthur A. Schomburg, who the Schomburg Theater is named after. Foremost bibliophile and collector of books of black. They tell a story that when his classmates, Arthur Schomburg was born in Santurce, Puerto Rico in 1874 to a German father and a mother of St. Croix heritage. The diverse background inspired Arthur to investigate how the black experience evolved in different areas throughout the world. When white classmates could easily rattle off accomplishments of their Spanish ancestors, Arthur became determined to have a comparable knowledge of accomplished Caribbean people of color and began to absorb all historical material he could find. And, you know, it's a story that fascinated by the independence revolution brewing in Puerto Rico and Cuba, Arthur moved to New York City in 1891 to get a better education, earn a living doing various jobs while organizing stateside support for Latino political outfits. Arthur's book collecting and scholarly research earned him an invitation to join the American Negro Academy with noted historians W.E. Du Bois and Carter G. Woodson. Arthur would go on to become the organization's fifth president. And the work of the Harlem Renaissance provided Arthur with outstanding book publications depicting black culture, and he traveled to Europe, Africa, and South America to gather additional material. By 1925, his collection maintained nearly 10,000 books. Today, the Schomburg Center is a thriving collection of scholarly research on the rich history of black culture expression, from African-American storytelling to Caribbean revolutionary memoirs to African-American poetry and intellectual theory. By knowing where you've been, you better understood who you are. And the big story was that supposedly the teacher told the class to do a project on, you know, their history, and when Arthur said he wanted to do one on African-American history, they told him it didn't exist. Arthur Schomburg, 1874, passed away in 1938. Naomi Sims, one of America's first black supermodels. She has... Go ahead.
Yeah, just want to ask Dusty a quick question. You said that was in Fort Benning that happened with the reckless eyeball?
Fort Benning, Columbus, Georgia, the infantry capital of the world.
Oh, no, it's funny. No, I'm just trying... Because I read a story about the South, and I'm sure a lot of you guys probably heard of it, and you said they had a law called Reckless Eyeball, and this story was a story I had read, very profound. It really bothered me when I was reading the story. It was about a boy by the name of Emmett Till.
Oh, the Emmett Till story.
Oh, man.
When I heard that, I was, and actually one of the things I had read for, we were doing a civil rights thing in one of my classes, and, you know, I have to do a lot of reading for my courses, and I couldn't believe it when I heard the story, but now I could kind of equate what you're saying to that, where this guy just, or this little boy, and he was a boy. He was 14 years of age.
14 years of age.
I think he's about, what, 13 or 11 or something like that?
No, he was 13 or 14 years of age.
Right,
when he had gone. He had been sent from his mother with his, by his mother from Chicago to the South.
Summer vacation, like my mother would send us down. Summer vacation.
And apparently, I guess he went into the store to try to get something. I think it was a candy or something, and then he whistled at a white woman.
There you go.
And he ended up killing this kid.
Actually, he didn't whistle. Emmett had some kind of a disformity, and he made the sound. They said his body was so beat up, but his mother, because they originally wanted to have a closed casket.
Yeah, no, she said no.
No, I want the world
everyone
to see.
Everyone to see. Yep.
But they did, and these guys. I remember in Thailand. And you know, they told the black guys over there, you know, if you marry one of these girls from Thailand, and he said, you know, standing you from Virginia, you know, Virginia will not recognize the marriage. I mean, you know, we're talking the 60s where interracial marriage was not recognized. I mean, Reggie Jackson, I think it's a known fact that the Mets said that they weren't going to take Reggie Jackson.
Yeah, they wouldn't take him.
Because his wife was a fair-skinned Latin, but they thought she was white. The reason why... Vic Powell wasn't the first person of color.
Yeah, he also
on the Yankees because his wife too was Dominican or Puerto Rican, but she was say in Spanish a blanquita, and couldn't have it. You know, and, I mean they tell a great story of Ty Cobb. Cobb went to Cuba, and we're talking about the first man voted into the Hall of Fame, devout Ku Klux Klan member, racist, but you know when you took a Cobb stats. And Cobb went to Cuba and played against the Negro Leagues player, Biz Mackey, the mentor of Roy Campanella, threw out Cobb 3 times in a row. And Cobb came back to America and told the guys in Detroit, man, we got to get these guys in the league. I mean, we're independent for the next 10 years. Let me write up some more names for you real quick. African-American, as we remember the month. Prince Hall founded the first Negro Freemason Lodge in America, 1748 to 1807. Another name, Ethel L. Payne, journalist and first black female radio and television news correspondent. Absalom Jones, the first black Episcopal priest in the U.S. and founder of the St. Thomas African Episcopal Church of Philadelphia. Clara Ward, what a great gospel singer, a hero and mentor of the great Aretha Franklin, gospel music pioneer. Another name for you, Eugene Upshur Jr., and wow, how many years was he the head man of the NFL Union Hall of Fame football NFL Players Association leader? Yeah, Upshur, what a name. And this is a lady, when you talk about the civil rights movement, I mean, Dorothy Height, you know, civil rights activist and humanitarian. I mean, she was there with Martha, you know, she was there with Whitney Young, A. Philip Randolph, King. She was the female counterpart. And she was, if I'm correct, years later, Dorothy was recognized by several U.S. presidents, including Barack Obama, for her tireless work for equality. And the Bernard College also offered her an honorary degree to replace the education she had been denied decades earlier. Her life work represents tireless dedication for justice and for all. Dorothy Height, you know, there's not a picture during that civil rights movement of anybody of merit. But somewhere online, she's not in that picture. Hardy Williams, politician and public servant, another African-American name. Jan Mielitzer, who was the inventor of the shoe lasting machine. You know, one of the inventors that we lose sight of. And once again, we got to go back real quickly to Lena Horn. You know, Lena Mary Calhoun Horn was born into a solid middle-class Brooklyn family on June 30th, which happens to be the birthday of none other than Michael Gerald Tyson.
Hi, your prophet. Boy Rooney.
Yeah, I recognize that name, yes.
Your boy Rooney.
She's the first superstar female beauty queen as far as black actors. You know, the lady came before Dorothy Dandridge and Halle Berry, and all the other beauties that we have today. Doc Stanley, Sports Dev on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul Channel, Sports Dev of the show. Harold, in your career, you did some world traveling. Any forms of you know, racism that you had here in the country?
I mean, you know, I ran into a few things while I was in Texas and stuff like that. I mean, you know, it's,
Texas,
you know, it's, we was learned, we was taught already to be very careful on where you go and who you talk to and how you look at things. And our whole thing was just get back home and we can take care of anything else later on, you know what I'm saying? But if we don't get back home, then we know there's nothing else to do but to bury. My point is to, like, you have to be, you know, when you're taught by, your family teaches you certain ways how to act and who and where you go in the neighborhood and in any country or city, well, you know what to do. Now, if you're a fool and you don't listen to what your mother or your uncles and people told you what to do, then you're gonna get trapped in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, because they survived and where they came from, if they still living on when race was really, really race, you know, you got to listen to what they said if you're going to make it. So my thing was, I let me just say this, Mel. I was a very good listener. Very good listener. Okay? In anything in life, I was a very good listener.
Absolutely.
And as I learned from everything. I, you know, you don't get to be 60-something years, get into your 60s, and make it, even in your 50s these days, from them 50s and 40s, and still be around and talking and communicating with people by being stupid. Okay?
Yeah, exactly.
So I can show you where a lot of the stupid people are. All right?
They're buried. Yeah.
So the bottom line is, my man, I listened to whatever needed to be said. I made sure I came back home that day to my mother and father. And that was the way it was, man. I mean, it was, you know, you just had to know what the rules were. Because, Mel, you got to understand, when you had 100 people, black people, getting killed back there in the Jack Johnson days, black people, nobody
That's
goes
crazy.
To jail for killing 100 black people every weekend. My man, you better learn something.
Exactly.
I had heard a while ago, now that Howard was saying that's why in the South, that's why, I don't know, if, I mean, you guys could probably, you know, validate this, but I heard a long time in the South, that's why they don't use the word picnic.
Yeah, well, picnic was a term
because
that
it
came
was,
about
it,
when the fellas were just sitting around and say, you know what, let's go just pick a nigga and hang him and kill him.
Yeah,
that's
why I heard that.
Wow.
Exactly.
Really?
I heard that that's why they don't use that word. That's exactly why.
As African Americans, you don't want to use the word picnic because that simply would just tag.
Exactly.
Now, you know what? Let's forget going down and having some ice cream. Let's go just pick a nigga and go hang him and kill him. You know, it's a sad comment. You look at New York City, and people don't understand that you know, New York City had, you know, before the Revolution, there were more slaves in New York than any other city except Charleston, South Carolina. Slaves accounted for 20% of the population of the colonial New York, compared to 2% in Boston and 6% in Philadelphia. 40% of New York City households owned slaves. Among New York's landmarks built by slaves are Trinity Church, Francis Tavern, Wall on Wall Street, Fort Anson, which is Battery Park, and the First City Hall. New York abolished slavery more than 30 years, before the Civil War and Emancipation. Enslaved people were acknowledged to be among the most valiant fighters on the British side during the Revolutionary War. I mean, what happened there, they didn't allow blacks to fight in the war, and then when the British said, if you fight and we win, you're free, but then Washington allowed them in. Despite every obstacle, the enslaved were able to nurture families, overcome loss and separation, and to pass along cultural legacies to their children. And it's just some of the things. Let me go back here. Each year, thousands of school children study history in New York. Slavery is barely mentioned. Slavery was kept in developing the city from its formative years as a Dutch and British colony to the early days of the United States.
Doc, you said Trinity Church. Trinity Church was just established in 1857. So what year did they say that was?
Among New York landmarks built by slaves are Trinity Church, Francis Tavern, the Wall on Wall Street.
Yeah,
because
that was 1857. That's around the time that they had the five points down by by downtown Manhattan.
Well,
I know that area well.
Yeah, that was around the time. Yeah, they had the 5 points over there where a lot of the immigrants would come down. So that makes sense. Right,
well,
that makes sense.
Before
the revolution, the revolution, okay, there were more slaves in New York than
except
Charleston and South Carolina, you know what I mean? And, you know, there was, in that Wall Street area, there was some talk one time about, New York seceding from the nation. There is no better able to tell the story of slaves archives. Okay, this is where you can go. And but New York association with slavery was an outgrowth of the central role the city played in the nation's economy. Even after New York abolished slavery in 1827, the business of the city was still tied to slave trade. It may have been abolished.
Right,
but
it still went on for a few decades after.
Hey,
let me say something about this, Doc. When David Dinkins was the mayor, Staten Island and some of their representatives and I don't know if the borough presidents or not, but some of the politicians in Staten Island wanted to make a move to succeed from New York when David Dinkins was the mayor.
Prior to David Dinkins, if you of color wanted to move to Staten Island, you couldn't get there. They'll burn you, they'll chase you, and they'll do everything to keep you out of Staten Island. But let me go back a little bit of history.
Well, don't say that because there was a black guy that did live in Staten Island back in the 60s.
Right, and they did live in one
house. And he had a mansion.
You're talking about Frank Matthews.
No, yeah, Frank Matthews. He's the only black guy that lives on Staten Island. He had one of the biggest house over there.
And when he moved over there,
let me tell you, Carmen Castellano is the one that the FBI was living in Carmen Castellano to look at Frank Matthews' house when they were trying to bring an indictment down on him.
Carmine
Castellano or Frank Castellano?
They live right across the road from each other.
Toad Hill, called Toad Road, and it's still there.
And it was sold after he was killed for $5 million to somebody else.
Right.
Let me go back a little further. You talk about the President of the United States and Washington, D.C., and the White House and the Pentagon and all of that. Do you know that it was segregated Washington, D.C.? Under Eisenhower and before Eisenhower, I got there when they transferred me out of Fort Benning. I had finished my stint in Korea. Then they sent me to Washington, D.C., Fort Myer, Arlington, Virginia. You went to Washington, D.C. to hang out and party? Are you kidding? It was segregated, man. It's that famous Watergate Hotel. You couldn't get in there. There was a nightclub called the Champagne Room. George Shearing, I'm one of the biggest fans of George Shearing. I couldn't go see him play at the Champagne Room. It was all segregated. It wasn't until John F. Kennedy began to say, hey, what's going on here? How come these people are restricted? We did not have a person of color guarding the tomb of the unknown soldier until Kennedy broke the line. I was one of the first ones, and so was Freddie Moore from Philadelphia. And other than that, we had nobody. That's how bad situations were in the 50s.
That's
and we
crazy.
Were soldiers.
That's crazy.
And that's bad. We were soldiers, man.
When I was stationed in Grand Forks, North Dakota, there were places in Grand Forks, North Dakota, but they had never seen an African American. I remember when they had a memorial for Dr. King, and this is 1968. And you know, the guy said, you know, he came up to one of the guys from the base and said, hey, are you people the way they say you are in the magazines? I mean, there were places where they had, you know, had never seen an African-American at all.
That's crazy.
We're talking 1968, man. And you know, I remember me and Charlie Williams, we were riding Amos Hill's green Cadillac, looked like the big fins, looked like the Batmobile. and me and Charlie had our green fatigues on, and Charlie was driving, and we stopped at a light. And I remember just the lady had to come back and get her kid out the middle of the street, you know, as he had stopped, let her hand go, and he was sitting there staring at us. You know what I mean? He just, I mean, they weren't bad people, but, you know, he was just sitting there staring. Doc Stanley, Sports Network on the Blake, on the Network Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports Network for the show. It is mic on, lights off. We are continuing the Black History Month, as this is the last Sunday. We are talking about situations and stories.
Hey, Doc, let me mention a couple of guys from sports entertainment, Black and Latinos, right quick, because I'd be remiss if I didn't mention some of the greats of sports entertainment. Let me start by mentioning the first Latino Worldwide Wrestling Federation champion, which was Pedro Morales from Calabria, Puerto Rico. And I mentioned Pedro, Doc, because not only was he the first Worldwide Wrestling Federation champion, but the night that he lost the title, the night he dropped the title at the Philadelphia Spectrum to supervillain, superstar Billy Graham, do you know that his supporters was so ardent and had such fervor and love for Pedro that when he dropped the title, the ring announcer refused to announce the title change? They refused to announce it, Doc. They refused to announce the title change. Refused.
Damn. Wow. That's rotten, man. I mean, there's so many tricks to the game. John L. Sullivan refused to fight Peter Jackson in those days. Now, let me go back to 19. Huh?
You said you're talking about bare knuckle boxing,
right?
Refused to
fight Peter Jackson, the best heavyweight in England, who happens to be a next slave.
But John L. Sullivan also had the longest time, the longest fight ever, right? 72 rounds he fought?
Yeah, but he wouldn't fight any
black people.
Peter Jackson
they tell the story of Jack Dempsey. You know, Jack Dempsey, he wouldn't fight Sam Langford, and he said, you know, because he'll beat me.
Yeah, Doc, but I want to clear up something. When I say he wouldn't announce it, does it wasn't that he wouldn't announce it for racist reasons. He wouldn't announce the decision because he was scared he wouldn't get out of the joint alive. That Pedro's people were so fervent and loved him so much. So he's like, I'm not going to announce this decision. You guys can announce I'm not going to announce that.
But it was Jack Dempsey who refused to fight Harry Wills. And Harry Wills was always introduced in the ring as the uncrowned heavyweight champ. What kind of a stupid title is that?
You bring up a point, because I remember they used to have Gunboat Smith. Was because of the fact that after Johnson, you know, they wouldn't let a black fight for the title. They had guys they called the White Hope champions, you know, because they said after Jack Johnson that you know, never ever would there be. I mean, because they figured Jack Johnson know how to act. The guy's got white wisdom. I mean, the man that implemented Sony to get Jack Johnson, Jackie Robinson, as you talked about the bus situation. Doc Stanley Sports up on the Blake with another Rainbow Soda Channel Sports Up show. The bus situation, you know. Jackie got on the bus, and it's always amazing how these things always stem from the concept of a black man talking to a white woman with those big things. I mean, Jackie's on the bus talking to one of the wives of one of the other lieutenants who happened to be a fair-skinned African-American lady, and the bus driver told Jackie to go sit in the back of the bus. And Jackie said, there's two things here. First of all, I'm an officer, so I don't sit in the back of the bus. Officers sit in the front of the bus. And second of all, I'm not going anyplace. Well, the driver stops the bus and lied on Jackie. You know what I mean? And they were going to really do some things that they couldn't do, but because if Jackie knew what they couldn't do, as Mrs. Rachel Robinson talked about, you know, Jackie, they had the court martial. Jackie beat it, and Jackie left. But, I mean, Jackie was sitting where he was supposed to sit. And, I mean, well, listen, to Squeaky Emmett. I mean, you know, they were the convoys for all of the important missions, but they flew the worst planes, you know what I mean, stayed in the worst condition. The Buffalo Soldiers, worst horses, you know, worst. Nat, are you still with us?
Yeah.
Your thoughts about Black History Month. I mean, Clemente, we talked about it. I mean, you said 1960, the double end, as, you know, they just wouldn't vote for him. So some thoughts and reflection on that as we talk about Black History Month.
Yeah, I've got several. First with baseball, I think what's interesting is when people talk about
Meryl Streep won the best actress. Meryl Streep just won best actress in the Academy.
Meryl Streep? Oh, for the Iron Lady or something? The Iron Lady.
She's not African American. Go ahead.
Well, people often talk about the color barrier in baseball, and I think there's an argument to be made that it was more specifically, more than pro-white, the color barrier, it could be argued, was specifically anti-black. And the reason I say you can argue that is because there's cases of there's documented cases of teams offering Negro League players contracts to go down to Mexico, learn Spanish, change their name to was considered a Spanish name and come back. Yeah, and there's documented cases of teams signing Latino players who were black, and then in those days the teams and the newspapers had stronger ties, and they would say, oh, he's not of African descent, he's of Indian descent and royal Spanish blood, and then they try to bring up some guys that way. And actually, terribly enough, during spring training, the skin got darker, and they said, oh, we can't pass this person off as not black. So I think it's interesting, and I think this is true of racism in the United States, in some ways, not in all ways, that there's a very specific anti-black nature to it, which, I mean, is terrible, obviously, but I think that is important in some ways.
There was a team called the Cuban Giants.
The thing that Nat has brought, and once again you've heard it first year, where they will, I mean, they said John McGraw, when he died, had a list of names of black players he would have kept, and the whole thing started with George Washington Stover, who the Giants had signed in 18, I got an exact date on 18 something, and the rest of the league said, no. That's when the general agreement was first implemented. They said, no. Let's make a deal right now. We're not going to have black players. But Nat, what an interjection and educational find he once again first heard on Sports and Depth on the Black Radio Network, where they were willing to have these guys go and learn. It's funny you say that, because I remember the movie Bingo Long and the Traveling All Stars, and Richard Pryor has his hair slicked back, and he says something to this particular white lady in the movie, and she says, aren't you one of those Negroes? He said, no, I'm not Negro. I'm Cubano,
Cuban. Exactly.
Yeah, and what you say is just really an eye-opener and another educational plus, and you look, because there were so many people who were aware how outstanding these guys were. Dizzy Dean said to me, me and Satchel on the same team, with the pennant be over by July. It's like our 21 guys in an exhibition game. And Josh Gibson, how teams coveted Josh Gibson, but just, the guy was black. And now you talk about how, I guess they wanted to go down there and they had to stay a couple of years and learn to speak Spanish. And you're saying if the guy was light enough,
yep,
and had learned enough Spanish, he could get over. Or better,
and that's
just
true,
don't
Doc, because I had heard many moons ago, Doc, that the gentleman is right, as you know, that they had been trying to pass some black ball players off as Cuban
way back in the day.
Crazy.
Of the Cuban Giants.
That's crazy.
And Dusty, you bring a point up, too, because Andrew Rube Foster, who we talked about, Rube started the Negro Leagues with the mindset, Nat, I don't know if you know, but the mindset that he said, they're not going to take one player, but they'll take a team. Take a team because they won't have to interact with that team. They can play them.
Exactly.
The guys go their way, we'll go our way. So that,
absolutely.
One guy, and what happened, that was Foster's mindset, that they'll take a team, and that's how the Negro Leagues came along. He said, so when they decide to take a team, we'll send them the best team from the Negro League. But what you're saying, was there anybody that did get over before Jackie?
I don't think so. I mean, this is it's vague in my mind because I don't, I have to go back and look at, some of the details or some of the books. But I think there may have been some players, before Jackie Robinson, who may have got in for a couple weeks, but ended up getting, booted out for whatever reason. The owners got cold feet. I think there are some document, there are some instances of players, but they're coming under the auspice that they were Latino, that they were.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
wow.
So crazy.
Orestes Reynoso, wasn't it before Jackie?
Who's that?
Orestes Reynoso from Cuba. Wasn't he before Jackie or about
the
same time?
Oh, no, you talking about Minnie Reynoso?
Minnie Reynoso. No, that's the word I get. No, that's just for Minnie Reynoso.
No, once again, a great line, another first. On the first Gold Glove team in 1957, which was Willie Mays' last year and Gil Hodges in New York, on that team you had at third base Frank Malzone. I believe Aparicio was a shortstop. Gil Hodges was the first baseman. I think the second baseman was Nellie Fox. The left fielder was Minnie Minoso, and in center field was Willie Mays. Willie Mays and Minoso were the two African Americans.
I think his first name was Orestes. Orestes Minoso.
But they call, well, you're the Latin expert, but they called him Minnie. Minnie Minoso. help us out, Dusty. For those, another African American first in Black History Month. Minnie Minoso was the left fielder, the Gold Glove left fielder, the first Gold Glove left fielder ever. In fact, Barry Bonds was the first National League left fielder to ever win a Gold Glove. As Minoso was an American League player on that first Gold Glove team,
exactly.
Only two National Leaguers was Gil Hodges from the Dodgers and Willie Mays from the Giants. There were no Yankees on that team. Malzone was with Boston. Aparicio, I believe, was with Cleveland then. Nellie Fox was with Chicago. Gil was with the Dodgers. Sherm Lala behind the plate, I believe, also with Chicago. Bobby Shantz was a Yankee. So New York was represented by every team, by one player. And so that filled the team out. Shantz was from the Yankees. He was the little left-handed lead pitcher. And from the Yankees, Willie Mays from the New York Giants, and Gil Hodges from the Brooklyn Dodgers. So New York is represented, and African-American-wise, Minnie Minoso and Willie Mays made the first ever Gold Glove team, and Mays won a Gold Glove for the next 12 years. Him and Clemente hold the record for most consecutive gloves, but won by an outfielder. The record for most Gold Gloves consecutively by anybody is held by Ozzie Smith. Doc Stanley, Sports Network, and the Blake with another Rainbow Soda Channel. Sports Network, the show, Black History Month. I will do a Black History Month special closing out at the before the month of with Bernard Hopkins. We're talking stories. We're talking history. We're doing some everything here with the mic on, lights off, but history continues to flow.
Do you know that a silent movie won the Oscars tonight?
What movie?
A silent movie. Yeah, The Artist won the Oscars.
Oh my lord! They said it was a dark horse. But
movie won Best Picture.
Isn't that something?
Right here first on now, Meryl Streep won Best Actress. Who won Best Actor? Not yet. Have you announced it?
Doc Stanley.
Again?
Hey, Doc, you have anything to say?
I forgot who won Best Actor and everything.
Okay,
was
that Rooney?
No, I didn't mean to interrupt Harold. You said again. I started to say, do you have anything prepared? Speak.
Oh, yeah. Well,
we
were all praise to the Master, my Lord Savior Jesus Christ. I want to thank the Academy for getting it right again. You know what I mean?
I want to bring up quickly before it's too late. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Go ahead, Rudy.
Howard and Dusty will know, really know this, and well, all of you basically have been kind of athletes in the past, Lady A. The difference between like the guys who play football and regularly take the field
the line and the linebackers, as opposed to how they say the kickers are always kind of quirky. The difference between contenders like Harold and Dusty, as opposed to the difference in the mindset of like the perennial guys who are just opponents and ham and eggers.
Jerry
the difference between as Harold had just cracking up one day, guys like Bruce the Mouse Strauss, who are like, you know, perennial ham and eggers. You know, like relief pitchers as opposed to the rest of the ball players. You know, there's different types of athletes who play different type of positions who seem to have a totally different mindset than the other guys.
Well, that's a good question or a good
story. Hey, you know what? Don't worry about it, Dusty. Bring it up next week, Rooney. Let's move right along.
Okay.
Bring it up next week, Rooney.
Oh, no problem.
The thing about that, I mean,
you know how they say the kickers are always quirky.
Go ahead, Hal.
I just think that, you know, basically when you go into anything that you know that's going to be, especially a sport that's going to be where you can get hurt and everything, you really don't even think about what's going to happen. You got to think about your ability is so good that you're going to be the best than anybody else.
Not me. It can't happen to me. It won't happen to
right,
me.
Yeah,
not
you know,
me. It ain't me.
I mean, it's just like being a police officer. I mean, you know that people are going to shoot at you, but you don't go to be a police officer and say, oh, I'm scared to get shot. Then you shouldn't be a police officer.
Harold, that's a tremendous point. I remember my mother, when I told her I was going to the academy, I mean, you know, my mother did not want me to be a cop. You know what I mean? And once you get on the job, and we have one of the greatest and one that's here too, Lady. You know, once you get on the job, your mindset is you're always aware. I mean, one thing they told me in the academy, in any situation, no matter how small it looks, realize it can go to the extreme. You must always be prepared. And I felt, what you're saying, Harold, that I always was prepared. I always was alert. I always was ready that any situation I could handle. I would not escalate it. Would not have to be. But you know, it was. You know, I wasn't going to be stupid. You know, if I got 80 guys there with machine guns, I'm not going into the building. I'm going to call for help. You know what I mean? But you realize that you went into each situation knowing that you will do what is necessitated to handle the situation. And it's going
to
be best for everybody.
True.
Well, you know, like me fighting and looking at the guys. I mean, you know, I'm getting beat up. When you're starting at 9 years old, and you're 12 years old, believe me, you're not the best fighter in the world, okay? And me being in the area, all these darn great fighters, you know, that's with is around me, like Ismael Laguna, you know, Emil Griffin,
Ray Robinson.
I mean, there's a whole lot of guys. I mean, there's, you know, you want to know, well, how are you going to make it, all right? Now, you're getting your butt beat every day. Okay? Beat every day during that period of you starting before you start, you know, being good yourself. But that's a long time.
Yeah. Good job, Harold.
Long
time. Let me induct this. Hey, Dust, Harold, when I was boxing in the amateurs, mostly in smokers, I would be cool all day the day before about the fight. I'd be cool all day. It would hit me, Harold and Dust, when I was getting my hands wrapped and I could hear the roar of the crowd, you know, in the arena. And that's
right.
When I knew, like, wow, we're here now, man. It's happening now. I'd be cool all day out and then wrap my hands.
Radio
man.
At its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Well, you're cool because of the fact that you're at home. You know nobody there to beat you up in a few minutes.
Exactly. You're cool as you walk.
I get to the arena and everything's cool, Dust. Everything's cool while I'm in the arena. As soon as they're wrapping their hands and I'm in the water crowd, I'm like, we're here, baby,
This is the real deal, right.
As soon as the guy says, next bout, Lois Jones, I said, uh-oh. You're marching down that aisle and people are roaring and then you see that ring get closer and closer.
and go up the steps and say, uh-oh, this is
it. You know what? I tell the story. You know, they talk about, you know, when Boyce and I used to play in the Garden for the championship game, the great Connie Hawkins, you know, because you couldn't be on Boyce High basketball team if you couldn't dunk. And they say what they would do, after everybody else would dunk, everybody would stand aside, and Connie Hawkins would be running of the length of the floor to the top of the key, and then he would dunk the basketball. It's a high school kid. And that's the time the other team would turn to the coach and say, you know, coach, I think I really want to play baseball. I'll see you next week.
Well,
you come to reality, but I mean, you know, when, like I said, you know, my whole thing is that when you're coming up when in that era, I think I came up in a great era in that 50s and going through the 60s. We became men. I mean, you became a man, and I think that knowing and seeing the great people like Malcolm X and Martin Luther King and Muhammad Ali,
Adam Clayton Powell,
and seeing these guys and seeing what they're going through, and seeing your own family, how they have to struggle and dealing with things and everything, you become a man in the fact of saying, hey, if they can do it, I can do it. And then your father is putting things into you, and guys in the neighborhood, you know, older people are putting things into you to be a better man and all that. It becomes to reality. If you're going to do this, you'll be the best at it. And that was the whole thing with my father and Gil Clancy. You're going to do this, be the best at it. And that was it. And I knew I was going to be best. No matter what was happening, be the best at it.
And Harry, you were one of the best at it. And as we salute Black History Month, and I'm going to give everybody a quick thought here, we want to salute you, the first and only African-American matchmaker in the history of Magic Squad. Hal, just a quick thought or two as we close out, some thoughts and reflections on Black History Month.
Well, you know, I'm glad, you know, that, you know, we got recognized. That's the most important thing. It took us a long time to even get this recognition that we got. I think this is something that our young youth is really start getting putting their foot on. They, you know, I'm just sad that the history of our people is not really being taken serious by our young people. You know, they're more about, you know, what rap song they're getting and everything else, instead of talking about how the heck they got here and who got them here and why they're free and they're able to get the things they're able to do and walk in the street without being pretty much locked up or shot at or anything, nobody being arrested for it. My point is that Black History is a good time for everybody to just look at it. I mean, every race, and just look at the fact that where we all came from and where how we all got here and where we're at today. And I think that we all sit back and look at it and say, hey, we did a darn good job. We still got some wrinkles, but we did a darn good job from where we came back 50 years ago.
As the Isaac Brothers said, We got work to do.
We still got work to do.
Nat, your thoughts and reflections quickly on Black History Month.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that one thing people, I think, sometimes don't remember, as Martin Luther King said, is that time is neutral. And I think in a letter from a Birmingham jail cell, he said that progress does not roll on the wheels of inevitability or something like that. And I think that's important to remember, that time is neutral and progress doesn't come inevitable, that people have to work for it. That either things are going good or things at time is not a factor. So I think that or that time is a agent. You know, it's just a neutral. But that's something that always needs to be remembered.
Right, great. We look forward to us being with us too. Quickly, Lady A, thoughts and reflections on Black History Month.
I think Lady A went to bed.
No, she's still here. Rooney?
Well, Doc, I just wanted to say that, that I take it as a personal honor to be able to thank and salute those who came before me and helped pave the way you know, people that I could never pay back for their sacrifice and, you know, what they did, you know, many cases giving their lives and an, you know, incredible sacrifice for me to be where I am now, being able to ride the bus and go to a store, eat at lunch counters, all of those things from the people who came before me and sacrificed. So I am honored and proud to be able to salute them for what they've done for me.
Wow. Lady A, you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, Lady A, your thoughts and reflections on Black History Month?
I'm sorry. Say that again, Doc. I'm sorry. I was in and out. My phone's dying. I'm sorry.
Yeah, your thoughts and reflections on Black History Month?
My thoughts and reflections on Black History Month?
Mm-hmm.
I just think that so many accomplishments have been made, and, you know, it's just something that it shouldn't really just be a part of history, but just that recognition that should be coming to us every day. It just remains apparent. It's still an issue that, you know, strides still have to be made for people to be recognized and accomplished, but it just seemed like it shouldn't be it's just a history month. It should be something that goes on every day, you know, where people should be recognized every day for what they have and what they accomplished. And, you know, it's just crazy. You know, it was brought to my attention that it wasn't the state of Arizona was one of the last states to recognize Martin Luther King Day. And it's like, what? Really? Like, come on. This is ridiculous.
It boggles the mind.
Some of the things you hear, you're like,
Jackson,
really?
It's like you. Doesn't recognize Black History Month, he said, because it takes more than it should be more than a month. It was Stevie Wonder who at the Grammy said, "Hey man, there's no Latin music here." DocStanleySports.com, the Trust in God Sports and Deaf Hall of Fame Entertainment
Museum.
Hit that site. I'm you know, as I look at Black History Month, I give all praise and honor to God first and foremost, and my Lord Savior Jesus Christ. As you know, I look at what I've been blessed to amass, and so much it is African American history. I mean, I have a bat of Eddie Murray, of one of only four guys to ever do the double 500 and 3,000 base hits. I've got the two pair of sneakers that Michael Jordan, the only two games he ever had a triple double in playoff time. I've got some sneakers of Julius Irving, sneakers of the great Oscar Palmer Robinson. I've got a basketball signed by the Dipper. You know, and it's not just African Americans. There's a stick here signed by Gordie Howe, another one autographed by a horde of NHL stars. I have a hockey puck on a stick signed by the first African American to play in hockey, Willie O'Ree. You know what I mean? I've got a spare of the first African American captain of the New York Yankees. Really,
I walk into your place one day, Doc, and I see a picture of my old schoolmate and the first.
Puerto Rican fighter to win the featherweight championship of the world, the great Juan
Laporte.
Laporte, autographed gloves. You know, Ali has a picture of me and Ali walking down the street. There's Roy Jones Jr. here. You know, there's Doc Gooden, the youngest man ever to win the Cy Young Award, along with his spikes up there. And you know, it's a Hall of Fame, but you know, you see the records that we've set. I mean, there's a lot of pride when I can walk over there and I see those gloves signed by Ali. You know, there's Roy Jones Jr. There's the rap from Lennox Lewis. You know what I mean? But also over there is my autographed bobblehead doll by Tom Terrific Seaver, who both Dusty Baker and Cito Gaston told me was the best pitcher they ever saw. And there's Cito Gaston, hat and jersey, the first African-American manager to win a World Series and then win it back-to-back. Dusty Baker, the first African-American manager to win the Manager of the Year Award twice. And then there's also Jerry Manuel's cap, the first African-American manager to win the Manager of the Year in the American League. Blessed. But, you know, as my mother says, only what you do for Christ will last. But as the pastor said today, you know, he said some things that touched me. He said, you know, I remember reading it one time, you know, because you always see pictures of these biblical figures and they're always pale white. And he said, you know, you just can't be in that region, you know what I mean, and be that color. And he said something today, you know, and I'm proud. I'm proud to be black, you know. And I think two people don't understand, you know, what Jesus Christ did for us. The Bible says, what is man that God is so mindful? I mean, you have to understand that Christ came out of heaven, not the best mansion in New Jersey or the White. He came out of heaven. Heaven, whatever you can envision heaven, multiplied 80 zillion times and you'll still be far remotely. He came out of heaven for us. And no matter what you say, there's a lot of pride in me because I know in that region somehow our complexions have a connection. And but that's even beyond that. It's just what he did. But it's Black History Month, and I'm proud that my panel here, the diversity, love having you with us here, Nat Jonas, Rooney, WF Star, Dusty, champion fighter, Harold, champion fighter, Lady A, champion in so many ways. Basketball, and she was a basketball at WNBA. Hey, it's to have met the great African American champions as well as I mean, I was blessed to meet Joe Louis. I was blessed to meet Jesse Owens. I was blessed to meet Satchel Paige. Not even talking about the late great Joe Frazier, Muhammad Ali, okay, Willie Mays, Oscar Robertson, Dr. J. You know what I mean? There's a lot of pride. And meeting these guys and seeing that they were great, but there's a lot of pride too in meeting my friend Dave DeBuscher, Jesse Barfield. You know what I mean? It's blessed. Black History Month. You're right. Shortest month of the year, and more than a month. What we've accomplished is a lifetime, and it's continuing. Dusty, your thoughts, and then let's say goodnight.
Well, it's still a continuous struggle, but there's a light at the end of the tunnel. When we finally realize a black president, something that we have to do our best to make sure he earns, and he has earned a second term, and offset the conspiracies to keep him out of the White House a second time. And with that, maybe as we progress further and further, I will not ever have to hear how does it feel to be the first black coach and a black Latino. I mean, and this, that, and the other. The first. This has to be eliminated by the fact that we have to keep driving forward and prove once and for all that we are just as good or better than our counterparts of a lighter tinge. And the fact that we finally broke the hinges of the White House, to me, that's a victory. And we cannot afford to let it be just a one-shot deal. We have to make sure that he gets his just deserve in his second term. I don't care what, how, what, and who, but we got to do that. And the only way we can do that is by getting these so-called power brokers, our leaders of our color, to stop going into the other camps and supporting these others and unite behind the man. And when I see that, to me, is disgusting. To me, is treachery because of the fact that this is the only way we're going to be able to keep that man in that White House, everybody uniting. To me, I still have that memory of all those power brokers in Harlem uniting behind Hillary Clinton. To me, that was dirty and treacherous. And this is how
okay.
I feel.
Okay, we're going to thank everybody for being with us because I want to make sure we get this closing. Leave you with three thoughts. Live your life today as if you have to stand before God tomorrow. Life's most persistent and most urgent question is, what are you doing for the service to others? Is it what you pay for your space on earth? You know, you talk about Obama, and yet, you know, he has the security is just beyond what anybody else ever had. Vote for Dusty on the Vote B, but if you're going to make donations, send them in to Doc Stanley. Leave the blank check. I'll fill out the numbers for you. Gang, I leave you with this great thought that Walt Whitman said, I no doubt deserve my enemies, but I doubt if I deserve my friends. I love you immensely. We'll be back here next week, continuing. During the week, we'll have another Black History special on Bernard Hopkins. Gang, God bless you all. Trust in God. DocStanleySports.com. Lady A, one word. Can you sum up the Hall of Fame in one word?
Sum up what? The Hall of...
The Sports Death Hall, if you use one word to sum it up, what would be the one word?
Sports in depth Hall of Fame. Meaning your whole little museum you got going on over there?
Yeah.
The museum, the archives.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness, I just got emotional, Doc, when I went over there. So I can't even really, I can't even say I
lady,
I don't have
lady, you,
one word does
like
not describe it.
The flea
market. Can I offer a word for you, Doc?
What's that?
I have the perfect word.
What's that?
Awesome.
Yeah, no, it's beyond that. I was just so taken. I almost cried there, guys. Seriously, the Doc will tell you, man. It was just, it was crazy. I had to leave.
Yo, thank you for that great hat you made for us too, gang. We'll be back here next week. Like I said, I wanted to make sure we got this all together. So she usually runs us off with a tape. Dear Lord, thank you for everything. And bless our panel. Let's subscribe here in Black History Month and American History. In Jesus' name, the Lord. Amen. Gang, we'll talk during the week. And good luck. We'll be back here next week. Thanks for being.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.